It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Ian Thompson's here. Lexi Savides from CNET. And, of course, Aunt Pruitt, our very own Aunt Pruitt. We're going to talk about the surprising announcements Microsoft made this week. Wow. A look at Deep Fusion and the difference it's going to make in your photographs any day now. And Lexi just destroys the Galaxy Fold. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 739, recorded Sunday, October 6th, 2019. Bob Ross with Biceps. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products, introducing the new Casper Hybrid mattresses, featuring their award-winning foam layers now combined with springs. Get $100 off towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twit1 and using the promo code TWIT1 at checkout. And by LastPass, a personal password manager and identity solution for businesses, all in one. You only need one master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit LastPass.com/TWIT to learn more. And by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud for self-employed professionals and their teams. Make the running of your business easier and more efficient with FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/TWIT. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. It's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Always a pleasure to talk to our panelists, but it's more of a pleasure today because they're all in studio, which makes it so much fun. Ian Thompson's here from the register.co.uk. He's news editor there. Hello, Ian.
Hi there.
Very nice.
Yeah.
See you.
Lovely sunny Sunday afternoon.
Beautiful afternoon. It's a great afternoon. Let's do two. What do you say?
Do two shows?
He doesn't get it, but Ant does.
Two beverages.
It's a beautiful day for baseball. Let's play two. Ant Pruitt, contributing writer at Tech Republic, and very happy to say we should change that lower third.
Wait a minute. What?
That's a lower third is out of date now, although you still do have that YouTube channel. But
I do.
Now he's a regular on TWiT. Yes. Just announced Hands-On Photography. That's a brand new show. We should have said Biceps on Photography.
Well,
just got a little bit of the gun show. Holy cow.
I got a little bit of that.
Not a lot of nerds lift.
I know. Ian and I are like folding our arms.
Yeah. Yes, no, I did some very heavy lifting yesterday.
Yeah. You had a rather large pint in front of you, as I remember.
Well, I do lift those, too.
Well, yes. No, yesterday.
That makes it worse. You know, if you both... Well, never mind.
No.
Also, Lexi Savides is here, senior editor at CNET. Hello, Lexi.
Hi.
I'm sorry about these brutes. Oh, you're Australian. You don't mind.
No, I'm used to it.
It's great to
see. I'm used to meatheads.
The Commonwealth is well represented at the table today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, when America comes back after a suitable period, then, you know, it'll be all of us.
You'll be back.
You can spell aluminium properly.
See. Remember, you belong to me. I liked your story in the Register. It wasn't yours, but it was in the Register. Here's that hippie, pro-privacy, yes, pro-freedom Apple y'all love Hong Kong protest safety app banned from the iOS store. This article had its effect. Apple turned...
They turned around. I don't know if it was that article, but or all the other ones. But this was just, you know, there's an app which shows where the protests are going on, where the police are, where the tear gas is, where the gunshots are. And if you don't want to go to a riot, then you use it to avoid there. And Apple pulled it, presumably after the Chinese government said, you know, nice factories you've got there, would be a shame if something was to happen to them. But yeah, Apple's always been very big on privacy so long as you're not in China. And if you are, you're basically toast.
And by the way,
they have actually pulled back on this one.
It's the anniversary. Wasn't it an anniversary of
one-year anniversary? Oh, no. Oh, it was 70th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party.
Right.
Chinese
so
state.
That was a big protest day, and they needed that app. And
they're still going on. I mean, this has been 3 months now, and unfortunately, it's not
getting
looking
worse
good.
And worse. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like they're going full authoritarian on Hong Kong at the moment, and it's and the rest of the world seems to be sitting on its hands, which is somewhat disappointing.
One thing Apple did do, and so far has not turned back on, they removed the Taiwan flag from the flag keyboard in the latest iPhone keyboard. As you remember, China does not recognize Taiwan. They say they're China. They don't recognize their independence. And it's always very controversial. Diplomats around the world managed to avoid it by just not bringing it up. Taiwan is not allowed in the UN, as I remember. But
I don't think so, no. Yeah. But it's just because of the nod and the wink type thing. Yes, we know you're independent, but
we
do have the largest land army in the world, just about 25 miles that way.
Can you blame Apple for doing what diplomats around the world do? They did take it out.
Does this just mean Taiwan doesn't exist? Help me understand this, because I'm not into all of
this. It's politically not... China does not allow mention of Taiwan on social networks. They don't want to. Their position is it's not Taiwan, it's China. And they just forgot.
Oh, man.
And so while you could say, well, Apple brought back that app, they aren't beholden to the Chinese government. But in a little bit more subtle way, they are.
It's, yes.
Because of all the manufacturing?
Well, this is the problem. And so this, and the reason I bring it up, because it's, you know, the Hong Kong, the Taiwan on Taiwan flag on the keyboard. I mean, I guess if you're in Taiwan, you care, but
It matters to them.
It's not a huge thing. Taking away that app, maybe that's a little bit of a bigger deal.
Mm.
But in both cases, this is the point, I guess, is that Apple claims to be, what do they call them? Freedom loving hippies?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we call them freedom. Obviously, it's slightly tongue in cheek.
That's a little overstatement. But Apple wants to say we're for freedom, we're against encryption.
Yeah, we're against encryption.
But when the rubber hits the road, when they're. And isn't it the case, though, that they. You know, we're going to see this in the U.S. because I think it was the U.K. that said Facebook should not be allowed to encrypt. What was that?
Oh, no, that was your very own Department of Justice had a press conference.
Oh, that was our own DOJ.
Yeah, that was Barr and his ilk.
And, of course, both Australia and England have said...
Australia's already passed one,
already,
hasn't it?
Yes,
yeah, no encryption. Mm-mm. But it kind of avoids the problem that... basically, they say, it's not our... We're not going to tell you how to do it, but we want the clear text when we ask for it, which poses a problem for Apple.
It does. And, you know, a lot of companies were already investigating, like, how to get their servers out of Australia so not to be affected by the rulings. So it's going to be really interesting times coming very, very soon.
We've talked a little bit about it on our event in Boston on the Thursday, the LastPass event. I had such a great panel for this, which was, of course, Steve Gibson from Security Now, Bill Cheswick, who's a legendary security guy, LogMeIn CISO Jerry Bushell. And we mentioned this. I don't think it was actually at the event. I think it was backstage I was talking about this. And both Cheswick and Gibson said, it's actually not that hard. They make another key. So when you and I converse, your conversation with me is encrypted by your private key. And I use your public key to unencrypt it. It goes back and forth like that.
Mm-hmm.
Only the people who hold those keys can read the conversation.
Makes sense.
Apple could also have a secondary, closely held key that they could use to unlock it on request.
So a master key, skeleton key.
Essentially a skeleton key.
You see, this did come up with the San Bernardino case, which Apple fought against the U.S. government. But there is the core problem for them and why Apple will fight it is because they've got to protect that key. And if they let it go, then they're liable for losing millions upon millions of users' data. So their systems are going to come under massive amounts of attack. But what the US government and what the UK government is trying to say is, okay, you don't have to break encryption. What you do is, the phrase they use is digital crocodile clips. You remember the old films where they did it? So
tap
just,
in. That's what law enforcement's contention is.
In.
All along, we've had tapping capabilities until now. Now, suddenly, there's end-to-end encryption. We can no longer tap that. All we're asking for is a way to tap it. With a court order in a legal way, we could always do that before. Why shouldn't they be able to do it?
Sean Gallagher got a lovely quote out of someone on this. It said, "Yeah, the only reason they're being blinded is because they looked at the sun so long." You know, I mean, they didn't really have the proper tapping capabilities on modern communications. You know, until encryption started to come in, they had a clear and clean run on this. And it's not like you can't solve crimes if you can't break encryption.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, it's just a lot easier if you can.
So this is the Justice Department's press release. Attorney General Barr signs letter to Facebook from U.S., U.K., and Australian leaders. So you were all complicit here. Mm-hmm. Asking, not demanding yet, that Facebook not proceed with its plan to do end-to-end encryption without ensuring there'll be no reduction in the safety of Facebook users and others. Think of the children. Without providing law enforcement court-authorized access to the content of communications to protect the public, particularly child users.
Oh, yeah, they had members of children's charities
up
there.
Think of the children.
It's always either children, terrorists, drug dealers, or organized crime. Those are the four horsemen of the infopocalypse, and they will bring them out again and again and again to try and get this pushed through. We've been fighting this since the 90s, and they've lost every time. But
I'm going to read you this letter. Facebook's proposals, this is from the DOJ, would put at risk, and the letter was, as I said, signed by the UK's Home Secretary Priti Patel, Minister for Home Affairs Peter Dutton, Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAllen, and Attorney General Barr. Facebook's proposals will put at risk its own vital work that keeps children safe. In 2018, last year, Facebook made, this stunned me, 16.8 million reports of child sexual exploitation and abuse content. It's estimated, according to the DOJ, 12 million of that would be lost if the company implements end-to-end encryption. That sounds like a bad thing.
It does. It sounds
yeah,
like it.
The thing is,
but at the same time, we just don't need everything out there in the open like that. Now, you can also say, if you're worried about the children, why do we still have Facebook? That's another issue.
I would sign a letter that said, please get rid of Facebook.
Right.
Think of the children. I would sign that letter.
Just blow that up. That's my two cents.
Use of end-to-end, this is the DOJ letter again. Use of end-to-end encryption, which allows messages to be decrypted only by end users, leaves service providers unable to produce readable content in response to wiretap orders and search warrants. I mean, if you're a pedophile, doesn't this sound like, oh, hey, happy day, I can post my pictures, I could send my messages.
Well, it's not like it's going to stop it. I mean, Facebook is going to dramatic. I mean, there are hundreds of other communications protocols out there, all offering end-to-end encryption. It's just going to make it harder to monitor. The potential downsides of this are so massive.
So what are the downsides?
Well, if you're talking about not allowing private conversations between people. Well, not having America, for example. If the British government had, this kind of technology,
you know,
at the time
Paul
of the founding,
Revere has been planning insurrections. We better just take him out.
Well, yeah, I mean,
let's start from the beginning.
You know, if the Brits had had this kind of power, then there would be no America.
Yeah.
There would be no civil rights movement. There would be, you know, it's just.
Isn't it possible? Okay. Understand, I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate, but because it's so widely accepted without even talking about it among the tech community, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Wouldn't it be possible to create a system like a key escrow system that isn't a backdoor in the sense that any time the government wants to read messages, they could, but with a lawful subpoena, a warrant, the law enforcement could say, okay, we want to see what these particular messages are, because I don't think anybody thinks it's a good idea, except maybe Barr and the NSA, to wiretap everything, right? Phil Zimmerman, who was the inventor of PGP, was on Triangulation a few months ago, and he said, look, thanks to technology, law enforcement has a giant widescreen TV that allows them to view everything we're doing, down from our Amazon Echoes yes. to our email. He said they just don't like it because there's a couple of dead pixels, and they just don't want any dead pixels. Mm. They get plenty of surveillance. But on the other hand, if this is judiciously done, if Apple and Facebook and WhatsApp and Signal and so forth had these keys, and they were very careful and protected them and said, no, it has to be a lawful subpoena in pursuit of a judge has to sign it. It has to be in pursuit. And it's only these particular messages. You know, we've done a pretty good job. Well, actually, maybe that's the question. Haven't they done a good job with wiretaps over the last century?
I think as Snowden showed, then basically give these people an inch.
Well, that's the problem.
Country mile.
Right. So wiretaps, when you had to go and you physically put those alligator clips on the wire, those worked pretty well because that was a big deal. Now with digital technology, putting a pipe into the AT&T office in San Francisco and seeing everything, which did happen.
Yep.
Means you see everything.
That's the problem.
And also, I was
talking... filter, if you will.
Yeah. I was talking to a security guy at DEF CON, and he was just like, look, the amount of data something would bring... You're trying to find a literal needle in millions of haystacks.
No. But let's say I'm investigating somebody. I have other reasons to believe. I can go to a judge, say, look, Your Honor, we believe this person is soliciting minors online and is collecting photos and is distributing them online.
Then get an order to search his device.
I want... you can't search his device because that's encrypted too. He goes to the judge and says, Judge, I need a search warrant. I want to see his encrypted communications. I want to see his encrypted device. Right now, the judge will be able to sign that, but Facebook and Apple and everybody else won't be able to give them that information. What if they had that escrow key and they could unlock it and they say, okay, just this once for this guy, because you said so, Your Honor, here's those communications. Lexi, what would be wrong with that?
Well, I think that's a very idealized situation. I mean, I think once it exists, there are so many ways in which to exploit it, in which, you know, there are backdoors to the backdoor, essentially, that you once it's out there, who knows, like, the protections that are put in place, you know, to keep it
safe. Is it that we don't trust governments?
I don't know if it's that so much. It's just that, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. So the bad actors, whoever they may be.
If the key exists, how are you going to hold on to
it? Well, that's the thing. That's really the question. You know, how do you protect that key, that one key?
Yeah.
I mean, there is...
Well, Steve Gibson argues this, and he says, well, you can. Apple can do it. They can have it in a vault. It could be like there's two people have half and half, and you could, in theory, really make it secure, couldn't you?
It sounds very James Bond. Really? I mean, like two halves of a key that have to come together. It sounds like GoldenEye, you know, where they have to put the nuclear weapon, those two keys go in at the same time, twist, and there you go. Then you have the secret key. I mean,
the DOJ letter calls it responsible encryption.
Yeah, they would. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's great for them, but it's just the potential for abuse and the technology problems. And also, if you're building in weaknesses into the system, there's no guarantee that only you are going to be able to use them. If you're telling people there is a flaw in the end-to-end encryption that Microsoft uses, and
it's
indeed
not
your
flaw,
man,
it's a second key. Encryption works exactly the same, works just as well, but there is, locked up in a vault in Redmond, a key that could unlock your conversations with me. And if law enforcement wanted it, they could get it, but they'd have to have a warrant.
It's protected.
Let's look at this logically. If we have a vault right here in front of us with one key, it's pretty secure.
Yeah.
If we have two keys, is it less secure now that we have two keys instead of one?
No, that's right. It is not less secure.
Just logical.
Yeah. Right.
That's the way to approach this stuff. Unfortunately, this is going to be another argument for about 20 years.
Well, it should be. And it's you know, the reason I'm having this conversation is... It is an important conversation. We don't want those 16.8 million reports of child sex exploitation to just go away because it's encrypted. We don't know. We can't tell. We've seen Facebook act badly in the past. It's not that Facebook's not incapable of acting badly, right?
Not true.
So shouldn't law enforcement, shouldn't be there something extra above and beyond Facebook's ability to find this stuff, that law enforcement should have a way? I mean, this is the conversation that we have to have. And the thing is, I don't like is that all of us techies, and I'll include myself, knee-jerk say, no breaking encryption. No, not okay. Can't do it. With exactly those arguments. It's going to leak out. It's going to make the bad guys win.
True.
Maybe you don't trust the government. The government's going to spy on us. All of those arguments... Those are good knee-jerk arguments, but I think the conversation has to be had. And if there are good, strong reasons not to do this, then we have to articulate them. We can't just say no.
I've been trying. You know, someone's been trying to do that for the last 5-10 years. So it's when the Obama.
We don't have the civility to have these conversations anymore,
and they have to be uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah,
this is the thing we have to.
They are difficult conversations, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure the EFF has written something. Andrew Crocker and Joe Mullen, an open letter from the governments of U.S., U.K., and Australia to Facebook is an all-out attack on encryption. This is the Electronic Frontier Foundation's response. They say this is a staggering attempt to undermine the security and privacy of communications tools used by billions of people. Facebook should not comply. they're asking for the government, these three governments are asking for nothing less than access to every conversation that crosses every digital device. See, I don't think that's actually fair, because I think we should insist that, no, you don't get a wiretap on all communications. You get a specific, you can't do a phishing
expedition. If you could actually do it on one individual person, but experience with the FISA courts and where this has been done in the past with, I mean, at the moment, you don't even have to get a warrant. You technically have to get a warrant to do this kind of digital spying on someone, but you can apply for it retroactively up to 3 weeks after the event. You know, it's not like law enforcement is completely powerless in this.
No, they have plenty stipulated. Yeah. They have a widescreen. These are just a few little dots. They are not going dark.
Yeah.
They have cameras everywhere in the UK. They can see every step you take as soon as you go out the door. One more thing that the EFF does bring up that I think may be a coherent argument. The backdoors into encrypted communications sought by these governments would be available not just to governments with a supposedly functional rule of law. Facebook and others would face immense pressure to also provide the taps to authoritarian regimes like China, who might seek to spy on dissidents in the name of combating terrorism or civil unrest. Once you put that backdoor in, once Facebook does that, how do they say no to President Xi in China, who says, well, look, these Hong Kong protesters, those are terrorists. I should be able to get their communications.
This is when all the judgment calls come in.
I'm throwing you a real curve because I'm shifting my position. but again, I think it's important to talk about it, to explain it, to say, instead of a knee-jerk response, which we all have, over my dead body, you take my encryption.
Like Lexi said, it's going to have to be an uncomfortable discussion amongst the group.
EFF also says this one other problem is that they don't really understand encryption. It's kind of, their responsible encryption misunderstands how encryption works. The fallacy is that, first of all, that our society has never had a way that criminals could hide is a lie. That's a lie. And
it's a thing in threat modeling, you know. I mean, it's kind of like when the US came up with this plans that you had to hand in your social media profiles when you're applying for a visa to come to the country. Now, I know there are a lot of people aren't the sharpest tools in the box, but if you're planning a terrorist attack, you don't generally tweet out, well, hey, off to the US, off to the great Satan to commit an atrocity. You know, it's...
Well, and if you do, you're probably going to use strong encryption the government doesn't have access to, not through a big company, but through your own software or
ISIS has their own encryption system.
Right.
And I talked to an NSA guy, and he said, we love it, we're all for it, because the minute anybody uses that, then it's just like, great, you're top of our target list.
We don't have to read the message to know that there's something going on.
It's all about identifying who the people are.
That always scares me when I use PGP, that I'm sending out a signal.
That's a whole other story.
I encourage people to send me encrypted messages that are completely benign.
Right, they're just saying hello.
Just hi, encrypted. I have one guy, Brian, you know who you are, who sends me an email several a day with news stories we should cover, but he always uses PGP encryption. And I'm thinking, I respect that. Something bad's going on. Probably Brian and I are up to something.
I respect that, though. He's sticking to his morals, if you will. You know,
I just wish PGP was easier to use. The more people would be using it, but it's just.
And there's actually lately I've been sharing an article about why PGP is not a good solution by a guy named Latakora. Let me see if it's Latakora. It's on his microblog, the PGP problem, and it talks about technical issues with PGP. He said if you were going to write an encryption protocol, that this is the last way you'd write it. And he said the notion that you could even make email somehow secure is crazy. Mm. It's inherently insecure.
Yep.
So he says if you really want to send a secret message, use Signal. You shouldn't be using email. And Signal's easy. It doesn't require setting up a PGP?
Yeah, I've been a devoted Signal user. I think Moxie Marlin Spike is utterly trustworthy, and I guarantee that he was not going to backdoor his own system. But has to be said, occasionally it's a bit slow. Messages can take up to an hour to get through. And I was trying to do a Signal call with someone last week, and this has happened before. The phone app is very iffy.
Do you get people giving you secret information, like whistleblowers, things like that? Because a lot of journalists use systems to do this. You probably do, Lexi.
I don't generally report on, you know, InfoSec or anything like that, so I don't.
Yeah, but if somebody wanted to give you the latest iPhones, you know, pictures, they're not going to send it over mail.
I don't think. Well, unless physical mail and an envelope.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Although that backfired for Reality Winner. She sent the physical documents.
She put them in her pantyhose.
Yeah, and then they sent the physical documents, and the government then went to the publication that was doing it and said, oh, can we have a look at that, please? Okay, there's the registration number. Right, okay, and she was in the slammer within days.
Because they could tell from the printout.
All the printouts got little sort of marks on the bottom to show where it came from.
Ay. But most journalists who do accept tips...
do on Signal. Yeah.
Use Signal or something similar.
Yeah.
I think Signal's very common.
I mean, WhatsApp uses the Signal protocol, but...
yeah, but I don't trust Facebook.
I don't trust WhatsApp. I mean, I've heard rumors from people who won't go on the record that WhatsApp has been pretty comprehensively... If you've got it set up slightly wrong, then you're completely open.
Well, there is one problem with WhatsApp that Signal doesn't have. It doesn't, when the key changes, it doesn't send you a notice that the key has changed. So if we've been having a nice conversation. And suddenly somebody gets your phone and starts, you know, says, I'm going to be Ian today.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get noticed. You say they fixed that?
Apparently they fixed it. Yeah, it was in the Android app, and Moxie put out a tweet on Friday afternoon saying that they'd fixed that issue.
That's good, but still use Signal.
Yeah, it's the gold standard.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good conversation. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to something much more interesting, like the new iPhone cameras or something fun.
Oh, boy.
Actually, have you seen some of the deep fusion pictures that are starting to come out?
Yeah.
They put it in the public beta, and man, now I feel like my iPhone is out of date. that camera's crappy. Already. I want the new camera.
Yeah, already. But do you notice that a lot of the photos, especially that Apple pulled out, they're all to do with sweaters? So, I mean, someone at Apple really has a sweater affection.
It's the new sweater cam.
To get the precise fine detail from hair and sweaters. Because every photo has like that intricate, pattern.
It's the sweater cam.
So I like it. I quite like it.
You're right. We've been stuck with what Apple's showed us up till now. So we'll talk about that in just a second. But first a word. You sleep on a Casper. Do you?
I need a Casper.
Micah has a Casper. We're getting you a Casper.
I need a Casper. Please and thank you.
You're welcome. Casper it's the official mattress of Twit, actually.
The official mattress of Twit.
I have so many Casper mattresses. Now every family member has a Casper mattress. When Henry went to college, he said, Dad, he was in the dorm, this mattress, how many, has this been here a while? I said, ooh. I said, we're sending you a Casper. And the nice thing about the Caspers, they come in a very compact box. He was on the third floor of the dorm. He brought it up. The other nice thing, they're very affordable. So after 4 years, he said, well, should I take the Casper with me? I said, leave it for the next guy. I'll send you one when you get to your new place. Casper is an online retailer, premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Here's my new Casper. We just got
nice
the new
pajamas.
You like those? This is the hybrid mattress collection. It combines the pressure relief of their award-winning foam with durable yet gentle springs. Actually, it's kind of amazing. You don't feel the springs, but you get a very nice, luxurious comfort, resilient support. Look at that.
Wow.
Elevated lift for active support and durability. I'm just going to tell you something about people
stick
like me.
The landing.
Fat guys. When I get out of the bed, I need enhanced edge support. Because what'll happen is I'll fall right out because the boom.
Crumples.
Crumples. This does not have crumple zones. It's hybrid mattress, gives you firmer perimeters. It's really nice for getting in and out of bed. Plus, those springs give you better airflow, and the kitty cats just love that. Cats don't like to sleep hot.
Is that Paris?
That's Samantha.
Oh, okay.
Boy, you know our cats.
Well,
you follow Lisa on Instagram, you have no choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's cats, you know, furry masters and all that.
Increased airflow makes it a nice, cool sleep. I love Casper. It's so comfortable, so soft. And, of course, they have a variety of mattresses. They end up not just mattresses, bedding, bed frames. That's the glow light. It's the best thing. It wakes you up. It gets brighter and brighter as the day, as it gets closer to your alarm time. You could turn it to dim it. You could pick it up off the stand, the charging stand, and carry it to the bathroom with you, and it doesn't blind you. I just love my glow.
That's pretty cool.
It's free delivery and painless returns in the U.S. and Canada, and that 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. That means you've got 100 nights to sleep on that mattress. If for any reason you say, it's not for me, you call them, they come, they get it, they take it away, and they give you every penny back. There is no risk. 100 nights. And by the way, even with the springs, this new hybrid mattress comes in that little box. So you could still just boop. Get a Casper mattress today. Save $100 towards select mattresses when you go to Casper, CASPER.com/TWIT1. You got to use the promo code TWIT1 at checkout, and you'll see, wow, magically, $100. Boom.
Nice.
It's $100 off towards selected mattresses. Casper.com/TWIT1. Promo code TWIT1 at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
And one of the people in the IRC is on a Casper right now.
I'm on a Casper right now.
Cousin of Cha.
That's good. That's pretty cool, actually. I think our all of our chatters should have Caspers and just be on the Casper while they're chatting.
Get to it.
We'd have a much more relaxed group of chatters. Actually, we now have, and I just told you about this, Ian, a new Twit community. I invite everybody to community.twit.tv or just www.twit.community. It's a discourse site, and you're all invited. It's a forum. Because what happened, so I got an email from a guy who said, you know, I love being part of the community, but the chat room is only good while if you're watching while it's happening live.
Right.
And most of our audience downloads the shows. They listen tomorrow or the next day. How the chat's now moved on. There it is. That's www.twit.community. Everybody's invited. It's free. There's no ads. It's just a place to talk about each show. When a new show comes out, automatically, I use Zapier, one of our sponsors, to automatically create a new topic so you can immediately respond to this one when it comes out. Lori's in there. Ant's in there. Ant, you're doing a lot of photography in there.
Just a little bit. I've been trying.
A lot of questions for you.
I've been trying to lurk a little bit, just watching people. It's been some pretty good conversations in there.
Somebody said, thank God, Google Plus gone. I need it somewhere. I am of the opinion that people are getting fed up with these big, giant social networks like Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think forums are going to come back.
I think
localized networks. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be so much better?
Yep.
Right?
I totally agree. All of the conversations have been a wide range of consumer tech to just general, hey, I'm just glad to be here.
It's fun. We get to meet some of our viewers. So, have you played now, Lexi? Do you do betas on your iPhone?
Not my personal one, but ones we have at work. Yes, so we have the developer on it.
13.2.
Oh well, on my personal phone is my work phone is an iPhone 10, so I can't make use of Deep Fusion because it needs A13 Bionic.
Oh,
so I know, but we have plenty of the new iPhones.
I am so tempted.
You're right, a sweater.
This is an Apple picture, and here's another one.
They're
Apple
all
picture.
Sweaters.
Oh, good grief.
All of them.
Well.
Is this a GQ catalog or something?
Yes.
So I'll explain what's going on, and then you'll understand why the sweaters. You know, Lexi, but I'll tell everybody else. So Deep Fusion is software that makes your already good cameras on the new iPhone Pros and iPhone 11 better with machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why Apple didn't put it on the phone when it came out. It's going to be part of 13.2. I have a little theory, though. You want to hear my theory, Lexi?
Yeah,
you can tell me if I'm crazy. You know that in 9 days, Google's going to announce its Pixel 4, right? The other phone with a camera that could conceivably rival the iPhone 11.
My theory is
I bet you they don't release Deep Fusion until after that. They're going to see what the Pixel's doing with the Pixel 4. Right?
I think that's a very valid theory, and then maybe do some tweaks behind the scenes and go, look, if Google pulls out the sweater pictures during the keynote, then we'll know that something's up. There is a sweater conspiracy.
To some degree, what Deep Fusion does is very similar to what Google did last time with the Pixel 3.
Mm-hmm.
It does require the A13 chip because there is a machine learning coprocessor in there that uses that. What Deep Fusion does is it takes a bunch of images, just like Google did on its Pixel 3. I'll tell you how it uses machine learning. So what happens is it shoots before you even press the button. This is Matthew Panzerino's article in which he talked to Apple and they explained it. The camera shoots a short frame at a negative EV, in other words, underexposed. Mm-hmm. It's dark. And then pulls sharpness from that frame. You're the photographer, Ant. You can explain why that works. It then shoots three more at what it thinks is the right exposure, EV0.
And this is in milliseconds.
Oh, yeah. This is all virtually simultaneous. Mm-hmm. And then a long EV plus frame, which is overexposed.
Overexposing it.
Then it registers alignment and blends these. So what is that? That's seven, how many? It's a lot of frames. It's five images. This produces two 12 megapixel photos, which are then combined into one result photo using four separate neural networks, each of which understands subject matter. Mm-hmm. I think that if you read between the lines, there's a sweater neural network.
There is. There's a sweater one. There's a sky one. There's a hair one. There's a backdrop one. All of these are the different elements that Apple says that can be identified through deep fusion.
And so it does a different adjustment depending on the material. So it says, oh, that's sky. I'm going to do this.
But it's still the whole process.
So it's like what you do with Photoshop by hand.
You're dealing with frequency separation, essentially. When you have that overexposed, you get into tones, and that underexposed is helping to give you that texture, and you meld it together.
So
that's what all photographers are doing in the end in post-processing is figuring out the perfect balance between sharpness and clarity versus tone and mixing it together.
And if you think about it, that's what Google did with the Pixel 3.
Mm-hmm.
Because
not
the problem
successfully.
Is... Not always successfully.
My floating cow.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. You know, but again, it's still a pretty good job to do it on the fly.
Yeah,
in milliseconds.
Just using the native processing of the camera is. I'll stick it in the forum, but I love the Pixel 3 camera. I think it's great. I've got a 3A. I'm looking forward to the announcement. I'm hoping there's a 4A because that's
What's
nice.
What's the date? Right. August 25th. The floating cow on the Ian Thompson.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's. I get worried about all this sort of pre-manipulation of images, and it'd be nice if you could just turn it off completely.
Well, you
and
can.
Try
you
it
can
out.
Get the raw, right?
You can shoot in raw, just with a third-party app because Apple doesn't allow you to
Halide.
Access the. Yeah, Halide. There's a lot of other ones too that are good. Just pulling
I'll put
out,
it in the forum.
Halide gives you access to raw.
No,
and as a result, you could if you don't like what Apple's doing. I guess. Here is the problem
floating cow.
With AI when it comes to... So this cow is not floating, Ian, I take it. He's actually...
I saw many things on my Scottish holiday, but floating cows was not one of them. You know?
I like how shaggy the Scottish cows are.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, they're actual total sweethearts as well, because they've got these huge, sharp, pointy horns, and it's just...
So you're telling me this cow was on the grass? Exactly.
It was on the grass. I have video evidence from the dash cam. People refuse to believe it. They call it fake moose. And it's
fake
moose.
So you're right. I mean, it can go hilariously wrong.
But I think it does look like Apple have got a pretty good way of going about it. But I mean, how much are they going to break down these neural networks into individual? I mean, is it just going to be sky, ground, landscape? They surely can't do one for every item of clothing, and not just sweaters. But it's
a sweater is a good baseline to work with, though.
Clothing has a fine
texture.
There's texture in it.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Also, what Apple's doing is actually quite interesting because they're covering like the whole gamut of light. So they have different modes essentially that can deal with the different lighting conditions. Mm-hmm. So as photographers, like when you go out and take a photo, you know you know in your brain you have to change the exposure, you have to work out sort of the levels of light that you need to deal with. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the iPhone camera, it has smart HDR for sort of like general lighting conditions, mm-hmm. which is just HDR, blending exposures together. Then there's deep fusion for those medium kind of light conditions indoors. So that's where you kind of need to work out texture, sharpness, detail, things like that. And then for the really low light situations, there's night mode. So they've covered everything in that one scope. But I think the most interesting part about how Apple does it is that, yeah, for geeks like us, we talk about, you know, how these modes work and what they're called. But I think for most people that just pick up the camera, they're just going to see the end result, which is the beauty. And they don't know anything of this stuff that's happening behind the scenes. So, yeah, I mean, this is just something that photographers have been doing for a while. It's just now been, you know, done through machine learning. We don't need to.
It's more mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely.
The problem, of course, is that the camera phones have crappy pickups. Crappy sensors are tiny.
Tiny sensors, not crappy, just tiny.
Well, tiny could be crappy because they don't capture a lot less information. If you saw the raw image, the raw image mm-hmm. from most camera phones, it's not good.
Right.
It's distorted. It's
neither from a DSLR, though. They
that's a good point.
They don't look good when you take them out of the camera. You're like, ugh, that looks bad. Yeah.
it's kind of a... By the way, all of that, all of those images, all that happens in under a second. If you go on Reddit, there people have been posting images... Not Apple images, mm-hmm. so there's no sweater in this, but there is a lovely little bulldog. And I would point to the hair on the guy's right arm,
yep,
where there's a lot more detail. Look at the dog itself. It's a subtle difference. It's probably not a difference where you'll go, oh, that's a deep fusion shot. But honestly, the one on the left is without, the one on the right is with. I honestly think that every deep fusion shot I've seen is more pleasant. Does that make sense? It's sometimes they call it image quality, IQ. I think the IQ is better.
So the arm hair thing on that was weird because he seemed to have much more hairy arms than the second shot.
I'll tell you what's going on here. It's also underexposed on the first shot.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
And so they have more. Whoops, they have more information.
Mm-hmm.
Carson's zooming in. They have more information in the second shot. It's the same photo.
Mm.
I think. I mean, I have to assume it's not exactly the same photo, but they, it's tricky to do. You can't turn it on and off. There's no deep fusion switch.
It just happens behind the scenes. And, you know, we've done a couple of comparisons too with the developer beta, and it does look sharper, even at a reduced magnification. But it's very subtle, and you would never know unless you put the shot side by side without deep fusion, essentially. I think it's still a great advantage, though.
Here's a close up, kind of a one to one. Of fabric, and even the color seems to be a little different in deep fusion, but certainly the detail is much improved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just sharpening or unsharpening.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. really something else.
Computational.
Yeah, it feels computational. Yeah.
And the thing is, you said you believe they're just waiting around to see what happens with Google's announcement. This isn't the first time this happened. This is pretty common in the Apple way of doing things. Think back to all of the other features built inside of iOS over the last couple of years. You know, how many times have you seen WWDC pop up and all of the Android fanboys say, oh, we already got that. You know, well, Apple says, yeah, you already got it, but we want to make it a little bit better for our users. You know, so what's the difference here?
It's very much Apple's play. I mean, they weren't the first to the smartphone market. They weren't the first to the media player market.
A little different because you're waiting to see what the competitor does. Yeah. And then the next day you're going, oh, good. Okay, let's fix that.
If you got the resources, that's business 101. Hey, I can do better.
Oh, it's good for us, right? Because this competition between Apple and Google is fantastic. It means we get better and better camera phones. Here's another image. This is Pixel 3 on the left, Deep Fusion on the right. Dramatic
much better tones,
dramatic difference.
I think, though, the interesting thing with all of these camera comparisons is so much of it does come down to personal preference.
That's true.
You know, so you can look at the image on the left and say, well, yeah, I mean, I prefer it because it's slightly flatter.
It looks more natural,
More natural. The one on the right looks like there's a sort of an extra light source perhaps coming from, you know, the top. It just looks a little bit oversaturated maybe. I mean, again, like you can pull these apart until the cows come home,
That's true.
Really. I mean, if you say which one I prefer, I say, well, actually, from that example, I think I want the one on the left.
You
I
do.
Think so, yeah.
Actually, I'm kind of...
This looks more natural.
Also, with the right one, look at the left-hand side. It looks like, as you say, there's another light source in there lighting up the lowered arm.
Yeah. It's like, for some situations, absolutely, you value that extra detail. But some other situations, it's like, a photo is a photo, right? And if it captures the memory, which is what most people are using their phones to capture, then that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's definitely something the common folks could care less about. Does this thing work? That's all they want.
Well, and what you can say now, which is true, any flagship phone is going to give you a great camera.
Yes.
Right?
Just right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Apple didn't even mention the fact that an iPhone is a phone in its announcement. They spent a lot of time on the camera, but not no time, zero time.
Microsoft didn't mention theirs.
You're young, Lexi. Do you still make phone calls?
Of course I make phone calls.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Through Skype?
Through the actual telephone. I remember the day of the phones. I even remember beepers.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was very young, but I remember they existed.
There's something nicer about a phone. I mean, I phone home to the family.
I hate making phone calls.
Oh no, but I mean, if,
we're introverts. We don't want to talk on the phone.
Oh no, because I call my family in the UK every weekend, so it's just
my daughter calls me all the time. I just ignore it.
Well, my mum's 80. Her typing speed's not up to much, so it's just like
no. But with my mom, I FaceTime. Right. Mm. She loves FaceTime. She'd far prefer FaceTime. Right. I guess it's kind of like a phone call, but it's a video call.
Right.
She really wants to see me.
My mom does not call me.
I don't like doing FaceTime with my mom because she says, what are you doing? What are you looking at? Are you doing something else?
While you're talking to me?
Yeah.
And on a phone, you can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can play Candy Crush, but no, mom knows. What happened? Didn't Apple have that FaceTime technology where it looks like you're always looking?
Right.
Do they still have that?
They put the eyes up to the camera.
They still do that?
Well, just use Memoji when you're making a FaceTime call, because that's the trick, right? You can kind of deviate off and it looks like your Memoji is just staring wistfully into the distance. And you're really just occupied on the phone. Yeah, I'm really listening. Yeah.
Sounds like you might have done that.
Shh.
Lexi's secret is out.
See, I never do the video calls with my parents because my mum is just like, look at the state of your living room. Go and clean that up immediately.
You need a backdrop.
Yeah.
Well, see, my mom doesn't like talking on the phone in general either, so I win in all of this.
Yeah. Well, there was an Australian invention which I loved. There was a bar which had a phone box, a soundproof phone box, and a series of pre-programmed sounds that you could have in the background. So it'd be like road music. It's like, right, I'm stuck in traffic at the moment, as you can hear. You know, and it's just superb thinking.
That is brilliant.
Brilliant.
Oh, man.
So speaking of Apple, interesting article in the Wall Street Journal about Tim Cook's diplomacy with the president. How Tim Cook won Donald Trump's ear. Apparently they have had dinner together many times. Of course, Cook has been lobbying to reduce or eliminate the tariffs, the Chinese tariffs.
Yeah.
That has not worked.
Nope.
That has not worked. So those tariffs are still on. In fact, the big jump, 25% on Mac Pro parts, they lobbied and still five of the parts out of the total. Apple said there are 10 different items. Five, they got an exemption. Five, they did not. Even though Cook even went so far as to say, Mr. President, we've decided to make the Mac Pro in Texas. Still.
Except that they were already making the Mac Pro in Texas.
Actually, you have a good article.
Details.
Kieran McCarthy. Brave Patriot Apple. You guys don't like Apple, do you?
Oh, we don't like everyone, really.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the motto of the publication, as you can see, is biting the hand that feeds IT.
Truth comes out.
Well, no, I'm continually asked by PRs, like, how do we get into the register? It's like, it's easy. You just muck up really badly and we'll be there for you.
We'll be glad to write about you. As part of its commitment to U.S. economic growth, Apple today confirmed its newly redesigned Mac Pro will be manufactured in Austin, Texas. Except, they've been doing that since 2013. And they're still not getting, by the way, the exemptions. Apple will not get a tariff waiver or relief for Mac Pro parts made in China. So now it's not enough to assemble in Texas. We want you to make it all in the U.S.
I'm not mad about that.
The problem is we don't have that capability in many cases.
No, it's a two-year, three-year runtime to set it up.
Set it up then.
Yeah, I mean, they've had
these
companies have had the tax breaks that those to bring this foreign money back in. They should be using it to invest in American business, but rather than giving it to shareholders and buying their own shares. But I mean, look, more domestic production, fine, but it is going to cost more, and I'm fine with that, to be honest. If it means political prisoners aren't building these things with their teeth, then it's fine. But I think trying to get the Donald to, cut you a little bit of slack is a very dangerous thing to do. I mean, Britain was under the impression that it was going to get preferential treatment, and we got hit by a massive load of tariffs on Friday. So,
just ask Rick Perry how fun it is.
Oh yeah,
to be in the orbit. So there you have it. You can win his ear, you could take him to dinner, but you're still going to get a 25% tax.
Yeah,
and I kind of agree with you. I think this. I don't know if tariffs are the right way to do it, because honestly, it's just a tax on us.
Yes, that's all it is.
But I don't think it's a bad thing to encourage American companies to bring manufacture back.
Just bring it all here. There's going to be a little bit of a growing pain and hurt to get it rolling. But in the end, wouldn't it be worth it?
Yeah.
And also, if you're paying decent wages, then they can buy more of your kit.
Yes.
Positive reinforcement cycle.
Yes. Recycling your cash.
Yeah. I guess maybe we should take a break and then continue on. What a great panel.
We left out one thing.
What did we leave out? Did I do something wrong?
That's also 25% on whiskey.
Oh, I was panic buying yesterday.
You should be drinking Kentucky bourbon, not that Scottish crap.
Good. Okay, these are fighting words. Let me show you how we go to town on people like you.
Quick, John, see if there's any whiskey in my cupboard.
Oh, man.
I think I brought some in.
I mean, I was panic buying. I was literally panic buying.
I don't know if it's American made.
I was literally panic buying yesterday. I picked up three.
So wait a minute. It's going to cost you 25%
more. 25% more on Scotch, Irish whiskey, French wine, French cheeses. So, I mean, I went down to a beverage shop yesterday.
Is it a cheese store?
I have this covered this time.
Oh, nice.
But 18-year-old.
The shelves were half empty.
Nice.
I mean, the clerk said that there'd been people buying huge amounts of scotch yesterday.
Yep.
25%
is a lot.
Yeah.
You're clearing out the shelves.
So, did you buy this before the tariff?
Oh, no, I did not. But I am considering reloading.
Stocking up.
I had to think about it. I said, well, I may be fine until about May or so.
John, bring us glasses, too.
Please, sir.
Wow. That's a bummer. I'm more worried about that than the iPhone tariff.
I am.
You don't like bourbon. It's too sweet.
No, I like bourbon.
Oh.
But give me a single malt first. Scotch.
You like that peaty flavor.
Yes.
I just can't get used to the sweetness of bourbons. It's like sweeties for kids.
What's your beverage? What do you like?
Nothing with alcohol in it.
Does it open the sleeves?
Are you sure you're in Australia?
I know. That's why they deported me.
You can't come
here. You can't drink it.
All right. We'll get you a soft drink. But meanwhile.
Oh, my word.
We had so much fun in Boston on Thursday, that panel that we did for LastPass. We talked a lot about authentication, how you prove you are who you say you are, what's wrong with the system we have now, passwords, and where we're going. And it was really great. So I just want to say once again, thank you to LastPass. We had 250, 300 people show up.
Whoa.
Well, we had 450 people say yes. And so I said, oh, you're going to get them all, which I should have just. They said, oh, only about 30% of people who say yes come. So we split the difference. Mm-hmm. But a great, everybody showed, thank you. Steve and I did a selfie line, the Elizabeth Warren selfie line. And for 2 hours, we posed for selfies, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
That's a long session, but worth it.
Wow.
But I have to say, it was even all the more impressive that people lined up and waited for us for 2 hours, because in the other room, there was amazing food and hors d'oeuvres and beverages. There was an open bar. LastPass went crazy. This was a free event. They had an open bar. So next time folks show up, you got to, and I think we might do some more next year, because it was
to charity for every person.
Every person who came, $100 to charity. They got to choose one of three charities that LastPass picked. It was a really wonderful event. If you came, thank you. It was great seeing you. If you didn't, next time, please do. LastPass just put, though they know how to put on a party.
The weirdest thing about the party.
What, Karsten?
People asked me for selfies.
That is weird.
Lisa, my wife and the CEO of Twit, had a gaggle of people gathered around her. One guy, though, said, and I quote, "If Leo goes to Mars, you got a bunch of guys waiting in line for you."
Well, all right then.
I just want you to know, I'm not going to Mars.
All right.
Goes to Mars? Have I said that? I guess I did say I would go to Mars.
Wow.
But I figured I'd take Lisa with me. I'm not going by myself.
Seems a tad forward, certainly.
LastPass, what I love about LastPass, even though their business is password management, it's a password vault, they're always looking at the next step of authentication, and they really have gone the extra mile to make passwords as easy as possible, because, of course, they create long, strong, totally random passwords. So you don't reuse passwords. You don't make up a silly password that's got your birth date and your dog's name in it. No one would ever do that. Monkey123 for years. For years. That's not my dog's name either.
Okay.
So they make that easy. They also, since you can't remember these, remember them for you. All you have to do is remember the master password. LastPass keeps track of the rest. It's so good, by the way. I trust it so much, I keep everything in there. When I, you know, we're about to travel overseas, they say bring a picture, a copy of your passport with you. I don't want to just leave it in my suitcase, so I have it on LastPass. So it's on every device. I can show it. I can get it. If I need a new password, I could use the passport. I could use that. They have a security challenge feature that is awesome. Once you've added all your passwords, run the security challenge. They tell you where you've reused passwords, where you should make a new one, and they automate making new ones, which makes it much, much easier. They look at length, uniqueness, strength. You get an overall score. And now in LastPass Enterprise, they're adding some really new features. We talked a little bit about this on Thursday. Single sign-on. Eliminate passwords entirely. Use SAML. They have support in LastPass Enterprise for 1,200-plus SAML apps. That means your users identify themselves through their phone. They say, yeah, that's me. Let me in. Mm. Much easier for users, much more secure for you. And by the way, one of the problems people have with SAML is explaining how to do it. They have each SAML app has its own getting started guide, so it's very easy to set it up. They also have something new called LastPass MFA, which does multi-factor using not just biometrics like face and fingerprint, but contextual factors like your location or your IP address. A really good way of letting, you know, the software say, oh, that's definitely Leo there. They call it LastPass Identity, a combination of the new LastPass Enterprise and LastPass MFA from a single sign-on, plus password management, plus adaptive authentication. LastPass does something that is, we've always thought was impossible, giving you better control, more security, giving your users frictionless access. Yes, convenience and security, both. With LastPass. They're going to love it. You're going to love it. LastPass.com/Twit. We use LastPass Enterprise at Twit. You should too. From authentication to access to passwords, LastPass manages every entry point to your business so you can mitigate risk and improve employee productivity. LastPass.com/Twit. And I think we're going to do many more of these events because it's going to be fun. We'll invite you all because actually you should be at these. You do a lot of security coverage.
I do. I also have. The only time I've only been to Boston once, though, and I got into a very...
You wouldn't like it.
There was a certain
argument. Here's where we dumped the English tea into the harbor.
Well, no, it's not that. It was more like, oh, and I'm
right
Irish.
Outside
it's
the,
like,
the thing.
Right outside the right thing. Outside there was the boat. The tea was still floating, bobbing.
It's amazing.
Well, look,
amazing.
If it was Lipton's, I could understand it, because that's really not tea.
You sent us your drink. We want Yorkshire gold.
Well, yes, exactly. But no, I mean, as an Englishman there, there's a lot of there's a big Irish community, yeah. And the difficult subject of the Irish famine did come up a few times in bars.
Jeez.
And I had to point out that my ancestors were being shipped over here in rickety old boats as part of indentured servitude. So,
well, what about her ancestors, prisoners of Her Majesty?
That's right.
Palms.
It was a really odd decision, though. It's just like, let's see. You're in rainy old England. Where should we send them to?
Oh, that's
a tropical paradise down on the Southern Ocean.
They'll people suffer just, down there.
People popping up going, I'm Jack the Ripper. Can you send me?
Right. Does your family a long time? I mean, did they come from Great Britain? Do you know? No.
So I am actually the first generation born in Australia.
Because Savvides sounds Greek,
it
right?
Yes. Yeah. And neither of my parents were born in Australia. They came over on boats back in the 50s and 60s.
Smart people.
Wow.
I'm taking a boat to Athens in 2 weeks. I can't wait.
From here?
No. I'll fly to Athens. I can take a boat out of Athens.
Way.
Yeah, no, I can't wait.
Beautiful.
We love Athens. It's beautiful, and I love the food. And we booked a tour Athens as the locals see it, so I'm thinking that's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
Not just the Acropolis.
Eat all of the loukoumades, which are the Greek donuts.
What is it?
Loukoumades, Greek donuts. They're like Greek donut holes drizzled in honey and walnuts and chocolate sauce.
Okay, now I'm quite hungry.
Yeah, okay. My diet.
Really good.
Yes.
So Google does have an event. We kind of mentioned that coming up. There's really nothing surprising. Although, I got to say, maybe that's not the case. Look at this Microsoft event.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we knew everything Microsoft was going to tell us.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
They surprised you and Micah a little bit.
Yeah, and I want to apologize to everyone that watched the live stream. Well, so, I mean, they what's his name? Panos?
Panos yeah. Panay.
He said thank you and he began to walk off the stage.
I was watching, and Micah, and you cut away to a commercial.
Yeah, so we gotta show love to our sponsors.
I was watching, and I gotta tell you, I turned it off. I thought, well, we've seen everything.
Yeah. We looked up.
And then I came back, and they were still going.
Right.
Neo and Duo.
Duo.
So had they announced the Neo already?
They had already announced the Neo. We were done with that.
So we kind of even thought they'd do a two-screen. We'd seen Courier. Mm-hmm. We thought it was called Project Andromeda. We thought we'd see this at two-screen laptop.
Centaurus.
Centaurus, that's right. I'm sorry, not Andromeda. Won't be out until Christmas 2020, so okay. Yeah. I was impressed, actually, by the Surface X, which I guess is a replacement for the Surface Go.
Right, right.
And that's...
Because I wasn't too enthused about the Surface Go when we talked about it.
It was underperforming.
Weekly, but
yeah.
The Surface X is definitely a worthy upgrade.
It's ARM-based, though, the Surface Pro X, right? And it has... what's I really like is this pen that is tucked away inside the folding keyboard.
I like that.
And with it charges itself there. Mm. I priced it out. I was a little disappointed. It starts at $999, but the one you want is almost $2,000.
Yeah,
I'd much rather have the Surface laptop, the 15-inch. Can you work that out for me, sir?
That's please? Nice. And that has AMD in it, which is one of the versions AMD. Has AMD in it. I think that's great news for AMD, although we have a lot in the Twit community. We have a lot of AMD fans that say, Leo, you should talk about Ryzen more. It's really amazing. And they were disappointed because it's the second generation.
Right, yeah. Unfortunately, it's not the top tier.
The old Ryzen.
For the mobile side.
But that is one problem AMD's faced, which is lack of mobile parts, right?
But with a Duo, they've got a dual-screen phone, which might actually work. Because didn't you live stream breaking a Samsung this week?
Yes.
Boy.
There was a Galaxy Fold.
You had a Fold and broke it?
Yes.
But intentionally or unintentionally?
Well, it was really to test the durability of the Fold. So we borrowed a machine that helps basically open and close it as many times. You know, it can go up to about as fast, I think, as 5 times a second, but we slowed it down.
Yeah.
And so just opened and closed it like so. And
that's
and
the
had
silliest
a little,
machine I ever saw.
It got up to about 117,000.
Yeah, I think 121,000, I think was
Who would do that 121,000
times? Great question. So Samsung put out a video to basically say, yes, the Fold can withstand 200,000 opens and closes within its lifetime. They put out a video that was basically doing a similar thing with their own machine.
Right.
We don't know what that machine was. So this machine helped us kind of get somewhat close to that and just see how far we could take
it. Let me do some calculations. How many times do you look at your phone a day? 20 times, 30 times?
Yeah, average number person, of times. I think it was like 40 to 50 times.
Let's say 50 times.
Yeah. I think Samsung said Samsung say that something like 200,000 would cover you for about 5 years or something?
Yeah, roughly.
I'm just doing some calculations. 50 times 365, you open it 18,000 times a year. Mm-hmm. You have it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's still well under 100,000 opens and closes.
Right.
So this isn't the end of the world.
No.
Did it start to look funky after a few times, though?
So,
that's the question.
No, it actually was. So what happened was we had it turned off and then turned it on at intervals to see what had happened, if there was any deterioration of the screen, if the hinge had started making any strange noises or anything like that. I think really the only deterioration started in the 100,000 range.
That's not bad.
And then the screen itself, one of the sides of the screen is sadly no longer working. I think that look, when you close it though, you can still use it as a clamshell in the closed configuration. So it still works in
part. Your phone isn't going to stop working. You can still call home.
Yeah.
In my theory, Samsung needs to change that from 200,000 to 121,000.
I'd say
maybe
10 years of use, according to CNET. Just leave it at that.
Just change it. Right.
It was just—it's fun. It wasn't a scientific test, so it was just some fun. And yeah, look, it's a lot sturdier than I think a lot of people gave it credit for. That's what we learned.
Would you use the Fold now that you've played with it and seen it?
It's one of those things that I saw it and I thought, no, this is completely silly. Why would anyone want this? And then you start using it and you go, actually, it feels kind of cool in the hand. It has this kind of nice heft to it, especially when you use it in the closed configuration. It just feels it feels like an old school, I guess, like Nokia.
So $2,000 worth?
Is it worth $2,000? No, I don't think it is for me.
Okay.
But I don't think I'm necessarily the target audience. But it's such an interesting way to see how the phone market is going to evolve, because foldables and, you know, I guess the Duo isn't technically a foldable screen. It's two screens with a hinge that come together. But this is the next frontier. I mean, it's really designed for people that want a productivity device, that they want to be able to multitask. They want to be able to have a big screen. Taking photos on the Galaxy Fold is hilarious. Oh, it's really cumbersome to do it. Yeah. But again, it's like taking photos on a tablet. I'm not a fan of it, but many people have said, hey, take photos on a tablet all the time.
Yeah.
Don't say anything bad about it.
So does it have to be open to take the photo?
So it has a camera. It has a selfie camera on the front. And then when you open it, it does have the cameras as well. You can use for the rear camera. Mm-hmm. So you can use it in many different ways.
So you have to turn it screen out to take a picture?
No, there is a camera on
the, there is one on the back.
Yes, yes. And so you can take the photos. Or there's a selfie camera too.
Right.
There's lots of different. There's like 5-6 cameras on that thing.
People keep saying productivity when they talk about these dual screens. But
what about watching movies?
I'm still not there yet on that small form factor.
So this is going to be the debate because, and so we should say that after you guys took a break, you came back and look, Santa Spinay is showing off her phone, which was such a shock because Microsoft swore for years we're never making a Surface phone. People say we want a Surface phone. It's a sad story because Microsoft late to the phone game, nevertheless, did what Apple's famous for doing. They waited. They said, huh, what has Apple done? What has Google done? Let's do Windows Phone. I thought Windows Phone had a great interface. I thought it was really nice. It just was unaccountably a flop. They even bought Nokia, who made the best camera phones out there.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars. Ended up killing that. Why did Microsoft fail at phones?
Because they couldn't get Ballmer to buy in.
It was Ballmer's fault.
Everything
was Ballmer's fault.
Well, no, I mean, this is, okay. They tried before while Ballmer was still sort of second fiddle with Wince, Windows CE.
Yeah.
That was originally aptly
named Wince.
Yeah. And that was just a dog on legs. So then they, you know, they realized.
A phone doesn't need a start menu, we learned.
Yeah. So then they sort of think, right, okay, well, we'll launch with Windows Phone. But then they shot themselves in the foot immediately because Nokia had some great handsets. The cameras in particular were superb. But then when Windows Phone 7 came out, then they said, okay, we're going to go to Phone 8, but none of your existing hardware is going to be able to handle Phone 8, so you've got to buy a new phone.
Ugh.
And
they didn't
help out their developers, and it was a thousand cuts of stupidity. And I still
They also never got the carrier's support, right? The carrier said, we've got Android and iOS. And even if they carried it, they wouldn't.
They put it in the back.
I remember, they put it in the back. You'd go into a Verizon store and say, I'd like a phone, and they'd never mention. Mm-hmm.
They put it in the back corner.
Windows phone. I thought it should have done better than it did. But Microsoft, once bitten, twice shy, their hands burned. They pulled back. They took a loss on Nokia, billions of dollars.
Destroyed and said, never tens again. Of thousands of jobs.
Yeah, never again.
What did they announce?
A phone. They said, "Oh no, it's not a phone. It's the Duo, but it looks like a phone. It doesn't have a folding screen. It has two screens with a hinge.
If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
It's a goose.
Now, correct me. It's a vicious goose. Correct me if I'm wrong. It didn't look like it had a camera. Maybe because that's these.
So I think it did have one camera. Again, though, very limited hands-on time. No, I think that there was just one promo video. So there's still a lot of specs. We don't know.
It could have a great camera in a year from now because it's not going to be out for more than a year.
All right. They still have time to develop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought that was a stunner. Talk about one more thing.
1.1 is what Micah and I said.
You didn't expect it. I didn't expect it. I thought we're done.
We were done when we saw the Neo. That was it.
Unbelievable.
Who would have thought it, though? Microsoft wowing people when it came to presentations.
I'm loving
it. Whereas Apples are putting everyone to sleep. Didn't we say that's what makes
That's what makes tech interesting is competition. You want to see AMD and Intel fighting. You want to see Apple and Google fighting. You want to see Microsoft saying... Yeah. Hold my beer.
Right.
I can do it better. I love that. It's good for us.
Yeah, it is.
They also announced an ARM, this Surface Pro X, which is ARM-based. They don't say it's ARM-based. They say it's based on the Microsoft SQ1 chip.
Their custom chips.
Yeah.
Which is an ARM chip with some other stuff involved. They also might have
slightly more success with an ARM system now, considering how much of that stuff has gone cloudy.
I have used Windows on ARM before on the 850, which was too slow. Mm-mm. This the ARM in this is based on the CX, which is their desktop class.
Yep.
So it could be presumed. I really want to buy it. I really think, but I just don't want to buy it until I see what Paul Thurrott says about it, because I'm worried. I bought the Surface Go, and it was just a little too slow. I bought the NVX2, which was ARM-based. It was awful, unusable. Have you played? You haven't had a chance to play with these.
Not
yet.
With the X, no. Yeah. No, not yet. But the previous generations, yes.
I mean, like the Go. I love that form factor. I love the idea of a pen. They're hidden away inside.
I like the idea of the pen. But I wanted to see the horsepower. It looks like it's going to be capable, considering they ran Adobe Fresco in their demo.
Right.
But that's, I'd like to be able to open up a couple layers in Photoshop and
don't get crazy.
You know, use the brush.
Don't go crazy.
You know, because it's a creator's device. That's how they're touting it, creator and productivity.
Yeah, but although Microsoft, and I've learned this phrase from Mary Jo Foley, often uses the phrase first line workers, which is like people who are dealing with the public and are holding a computer, like maybe airline reservation people or customer service reps. And it's her opinion, at least, that the Surface Go was a first-line worker product for people who aren't doing heavy computing.
It was perfectly fine for that.
It was absolutely fine for that. This will have 13-hour battery life. This will have LTE built in. It might be the ultimate mobility device. Is it aimed at the iPad Pro? Is that?
That's how I took it. That's how I took it.
Well, it definitely is in terms of, you think, how Microsoft has put this together. You know, everything is Microsoft developed. And if you think about how Apple has done all of its devices, you know, A13 chips, you know, all Apple.
This is kind of like their A13,
isn't it? Kind of is, yeah, the whole thing. So they're definitely taking a leaf out of that book, I think, in terms of the whole integrated system and everything that they have control over. So it's going to be really interesting to see if it actually lives up to it when we get to benchmark it.
I see it as competition, because you're getting a full version of the Windows OS and not some mobile version of it. You know,
that's, well, but there, I mean, you can make an argument that iPad OS is better suited because it's designed for that form factor. Windows is not.
I've yet to play with the updated iPad OS. The other version, the previous version, got on my nerves when it came to trying to find my stuff for
it always felt like a little bit of a struggle. Like, I saw
people
like
this. I'm just looking for this raw file.
Who said, no, I'm going to use an iPad as my daily driver. And it always felt like, yeah, but you have to twist yourself into knots a little bit to use it as well as a desktop.
I mean, I was grateful for Cloud Sync for stuff like that, but it just got on my nerves trying to create on the iPad.
Yeah.
It just did.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to spend too much money.
No.
Because there's all these new phones I got to buy.
Well, surely they're going to do what they did last time, do little pop-up shops all over the country.
Maybe,
Give it a hands-on rub through, and then.
I liked the laptop a lot. I don't know what do you think the AMD laptop will be like? Is that going to be a good choice? Use an AMD desktop.
I'm going to be optimistic, but I do understand where our Twit community was coming from with regards to it being last year's tech.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I get that, but yeah.
Microsoft's got to keep Intel happy.
But I want to be optimistic. I love the look of those new Surface laptops, and just
they're so thin and beautiful. And they got rid of the Alcantara on the keyboard.
Yes,
because that at least give me the choice.
Right. I mean, I'm assuming this is going to be a CEO's computer and not a creator's computer. But I'd like for the 15 to be a creator's computer. But
increasingly,
you're
thinking. Different, but increasingly for me, power is not the most important thing. Battery life is.
Battery life.
I want more than 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
A MacBook Pro, that Touch Bar MacBook Pro, but it's like 2 or 3 hours,
it doesn't,
right?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you have multiple things opening Chrome, I've got Firefox running.
Oh,
I've
Chrome
got
will
Photoshop
kill it.
On here. I've got Premiere Pro. It's just...
It'll kill it.
Yeah. The whole thing just doesn't work.
But plugged
like
in, it's a great experience.
Plugged in, it's fantastic until the Touch Bar stops working.
I hate that Touch Bar.
Well, I was just interested, though, because Microsoft kind of calls its, I guess, Touch Bar equivalent the Wonder Bar on the Neo. Bar sounds like some chocolate bar or something. I don't know where that came from.
It sounds like a German nightclub.
It does.
Wonder Bar.
It does, but it did have some potential there that didn't look like just a widget, if you will. You know, I did like the idea that if you're watching.
So where was the Wonder Bar?
Promo
was this,
vid
was
or
this
something?
On
no,
the,
it's on the Neo.
On the Neo.
It's on the Neo.
Ooh. So the Neo had this. I couldn't understand what was going on, but the screen just is magnetically attached to the back, and it kind of whoosh, and then the screen doesn't take up the keyboard doesn't take up the whole screen. There's a wedge
you can slide
thicker than the Touch Bar.
Yeah.
That's the Wonder Bar.
Right. I think that's great from a productivity standpoint.
I call it a Toblerone.
You're working on
some
promo or whatever.
A Wonder Bar, though.
Drag it down to that Wonder Bar and take your notes on
the larger screen.
It's intriguing. I totally get
that. We've seen similar. Lenovo does a two-screen laptop similar. I mean, we've seen others do
I'd like to be able to see, again, from a creator standpoint, if I'm working in Premiere or something and I want to drag some bins down to that extra screen right there.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of real estate or drag my timeline down and just work right there.
There's a lot. Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're in Premiere, have their video timeline there.
And your assets sometimes.
You can scrub across on the touch bar, but it's tiny.
Yeah, but it's teensy.
And it's like, it's not very precise.
It feels like they put the touch bar on there and then we're searching for things to do with
it's like,
it.
It's just, yeah, let me see if this works.
And by the way, that's, I'll be honest, the main reason I'm not buying the Surface Pro X or anything else. I'm waiting. I'm hoping. I'm praying that this month Apple will announce the rumored 16-inch MacBook Pro. You know, thinner bezels, even maybe a better keyboard. Do you think that's going to happen, Lexi? Should I?
All the rumors are pointing towards it.
Sound like the magic 8-ball now.
I know, but everyone's predicting that. I mean, we've heard about the 16-inch MacBook for a very long time. It's been in the works.
And we know they have two more iPads they didn't announce.
Right.
We know there's stuff.
We know there's
stuff. What about the tracker tile that they were going to...
Yeah, so that's the really interesting one because that's potentially powered by that U1 chip that's in all the new iPhones. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know if that's a big enough new category for Apple to enter.
Well, they
got to
also say, hey, we're selling the Mac Pro now because they said they would do that this year.
Right. They've got to get
that. Sounds to me, that's enough to have an event.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. And if you think that maybe the iPad Pro could get an overhaul to those, you know, the 3-camera system that's on the new iPhones.
Get
maybe?
All of the Hollywood people involved.
That's
get
what we're taking. If involved. That if they do that, that's what we're taking to CES because that's got a viewfinder. We're going to do video with that. That'd be amazing.
That would be slick.
We'll come over to your booth, Lexi. We'll say, see, we got the iPad Pro with it.
And I will be laughing at people taking photos on tablets. It has a use case.
CNET always does a very nice job at CES.
They do.
They're going to do the big thing again.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be there in force, as we always are. Right. I'll be out on roaming the halls.
We're going to be the opposite. It's just me and Ant.
With the iPad Pro.
Yeah. I'm calling it Leo and Ant's Excellent Adventure.
I will be the opposite because when I joined the register, it was on the implicit understanding that I never had to go to CES again.
Nice, nice.
It's just
I have FOMO. I haven't been in years.
Oh, just
you've never been?
Oh no, I'm saying I think I'm the only person that still enjoys going.
You love it, don't you?
You like Las Vegas?
I'm moving.
That's another story. Now that's another story.
Oh. I'm moving there when I retire. Didn't I tell you that? Lisa and I are going to have a condo on the Strip, baby.
Yes.
God, I'd rather be rubbed in dipping alcohol.
Talk to me after we move. I might agree with you. So I love it. Microsoft showing some moxie, coming up with a new product. They also announced Windows X, 10X, which is
experience, maybe.
Stripped down, componentized version of Windows. I think that's the next. That's where Microsoft's going. An operating system, Linux is this way, should be componentized. Mm-hmm. It should be modular. And you put in the stuff you need. You take out the stuff you don't. Windows 10 is bloated. It's overkill.
Yeah.
I was so annoyed when I first sat down today. I'm using a Lenovo, but it's running Windows 10. I got a pop-up for a game.
You told me
you're getting that too.
But
and
you
you're
have
getting
to go,
that too.
You have to go in and trim the fat when you...
Well, I thought I trimmed
any
the
OS.
No, they continually update. They continually update the settings
for your
convenience to stick more stuff in there. It's
because the thing is, there are some people that love all of that touchy feely bubbly stuff.
Yeah,
in computing, they do.
I've used Windows for over a decade, and I'm shifting my main computer to Linux now.
Well, that's exactly what I said.
Sick of it.
When I saw that pop up ad, I know you can turn it off. I think you can turn it off. But when I saw that, I said, I'm putting Linux on here. That's it.
I'm done. Yeah. It's done.
You're using a Chromebook, though. You're using Linux already.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using a Chromebook. I'm going to have to replace it because it's on its last legs, and the battery with DEF CON and Black Hat this year, I had to carry around one of the big power packs just to make it through a full day. Mm. Because it's very difficult to find PowerPoints
I think you may be in luck. October 15th, the Google event, there's rumors.
Yeah, I know, but
new Pixelbook.
The problem I have with this, and this is something that I'm starting to get more and more angry about, is limited lifespan. You know, it's like this had a five and a half year guaranteed limited lifespan. And after that, even though it's functioning, Google will not provide it with security.
It's unconscionable in this day and age
We're trying to cut e-waste.
This stuff should be disposable. When it's perfectly good, it's operating, it's fast, it's usable. None of this should be disposable. We can't afford to be throwing this stuff out anymore.
No, exactly. And we should be designing so that it can be repaired. You know, companies like iFixit have been talking about this for years. And with Google, it's the smartphones are even
swappable
look.
Batteries, please.
Yes, that would that would solve a lot.
Yeah,
please,
a lot.
And the thing is, the processor progress is not dramatic over the last 10 years. Honestly, a five-year-old phone is not going to feel that much slower.
I'm sorry, there is no excuse for having a Pixel phone which automatically dies after 3 years.
I agree with you.
It's just
unconscionable.
Yeah.
It's an environmental nightmare. All right, so Surface Pro X, Windows 10X, Neo, Duo, AMD in the laptop. I thought that was good news for AMD. And again, that's good news for all of us. It's that competition thing. You want to see Intel be challenged, especially now. You want to see Intel be challenged. They don't seem to be doing a whole lot.
Don't want them to get too big for their britches.
Yeah. Google posted this to its Twitter feed.
Oh, no. What's this? Oh, no. My next-door neighbors have got their pumpkins out already. Is this normal? I mean, this is like the run to Christmas again. It's just...
This is the end of the month.
Dana
Fried, who is the lead Google Chrome desktop UI feature team, has posted, is this her home? It looks like it's a graveyard with all the dead Google products, Google Plus, Google Wave,
that is rather cute.
Orkut, Google Reader, Google Buzz, Picasa. That's terrifying.
I think it's rather cute, to be honest.
Still miss Google Reader every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Whatever happened to RSS? Why did
it's
it
still
become
the, I still RSS? Use it's RSS. There.
It's there. It's just not as good
this
as when it was
This is actually a display
Reader.
At Google's Seattle location.
This is in the Seattle Google
Plex? Yes. They have a sense of humor.
It's official.
Look at that.
Microsoft's still
G
looking
plus.
For
this. What is
G
point?
So sad.
Yeah, a lot of these things I actually liked and used. And
Orkut was huge in South America.
Well, Orkut, we could do without Orkut.
Yeah. The only place it was
we
huge.
We could do without Orkut.
There's still some, well, I'm still, Google Plus was a
Are you going to buy the new Levi's jacket with thread built in, the Google trucker jacket that lets you turn your volume up and down? You've probably got a review unit already, Lexi.
Yeah, do you want to be able to control things from your clothes? I mean, you know, Amazon's taking a big bet on controlling things on your person, from glasses to rings to whatever. So I feel like a jacket is less obtrusive. It's less in your face, literally.
You take the components out, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's washable, so you can take the... There's, like, little sensors that you can take
this
out.
This is... I said thread, because that's what it should be called, but it's jacquard.
Jacquard.
Yeah. Like the jacquard looms.
See, I've got this thing called a volume control on my phone. That seems to work fairly well, but, you know...
I think one of the initial use cases, they said, was for someone who was, like, a commuter on a bike, for example. So, you know... You shouldn't be listening to music while you're riding your bike anyway, but I guess if you wanted to sort of change tracks, you could do that within your sleeve.
Connected, not distracted.
Hang on, they're calling it a trucker jacket. You know your target market
Oh, man.
You can answer calls, play music, take photos right from your sleeve. What do you think this is going to cost?
I think it's around 200.
Yeah, you're right. You knew, though. Yeah. See, you knew.
I've read it, but I forgot, so I just guessed 200.
I just remember.
The Levi's Sherpa jacket is 248. The trucker jacket's 198.
And speaking of ridiculous prices.
I think a Sherpa jacket's kind of cool. That's the one that's got Australian lamb's wool.
Yeah, right up there in the collar. I mean, that's if you're talking about like higher fashion brands, that's not an unreasonable price for a denim jacket.
Hmm.
Levi's, it might be a little much. But I don't think it's unreasonable for what you get.
Well, given the fact that Microsoft wants to charge us $250 for a pair of headphones, then I think that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
You know?
that headphone price, though.
Yeah.
Tell me about those. Do you guys like how those look? Because they looked like a gauge, didn't they? They looked like a big thing in your ear.
Yeah. It almost reminded me when people stretch their earlobes.
Yeah, the gauges. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think people made fun of the AirPods, right, when they first came out. And people still do make fun of the AirPods.
So why not just double down and make it giant and very
exactly.
obvious.
Exactly.
But
at least
you need that surface.
It.
You need that yeah. surface to touch, if you mm-hmm. forgive the phrase.
Functionality.
Functionality. Yeah. So you can swipe and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just thought the price was a little out of control.
How good do they sound? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, we may be able to justify
we'll
that.
We'll know when Lexi reviews them.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned yeah. on This Week in Google, people are buying Beats headphones
yeah.
for the same amount of money. They do not sound good.
No.
No.
But then
it's
you
a
have,
fashion statement.
Yeah. They don't sound that's good, right. and you don't get any of the functionality that you could get from the Surface.
But AirPods don't sound good either.
No.
No. Well, they can at least fit better to sound better.
Do they fit better?
No, I mean, it depends. I think a lot of people, they fit really well. But mm-hmm. a lot of people, if you do something, anything active, the AirPods
fall out. They fly out of your ear.
Yeah. I mean, the ones that sound the best that I've tested so far have been the Sonys, the
right.
WX1000 Mark III. I think that's what, WF, I don't know.
Close enough.
I can't get their product name right.
Sony has got to work on this.
Yeah.
All their products have weird.
Just the Sonys, the ones that are the noise-canceling buds, they're actually really, really good right now. I mean, so if they sound as good as those, then I think, yes, they're worth the price. Yeah. And those are $230, $240, $250 in that kind of range. So we'll see. We'll see.
Plus, you have the whole aspect of people can see these things are in your ear. So they know you're talking to somebody, not just guessing, oh, something's wrong with that guy.
Yeah, it's like the first stage, when the first Bluetooth headsets came out back in the 90s, and it was just like, is that person mad or have they got Bluetooth and headsets? Oh, yeah, they've got a headset.
Right.
And by mad, you mean insane.
Yes.
not merely angry. Not
completely angry. Bonkers.
Yeah.
I still look like I'm talking to myself because my hair will cover any sort of head.
I love it. They're so animated. They're going like, yeah.
That's me when I'm having a conversation and then people are like, what
She's
are you
crazy.
Doing?
Stay away.
She's in Minority Report.
It's good. It means people stay clear. So
this is true.
Bad news for Libra, Facebook's cryptocurrency. Libra, the whole idea of Libra is it's not us. Facebook says it's not us. It's not us. It's a 28. We got 28 corporate backers. It's a lot of other companies. It's not us.
Less now, but yes.
Well, now PayPal is not involved. They didn't say why. They merely said PayPal has made the decision to forego further participation in the Libra Association.
I saw an interesting discussion about this from a New York professor, and he was saying, look, if anybody else had come up with this, it would be considered a pretty good idea. But it's Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, are you genuinely going to trust Facebook?
Is it a good idea? Is it? Do we need another cryptocurrency?
Well, no one's using the ones we've got. So
let's make more. Nobody wants. You know, I just heard something the other day which shocked me. The energy used to make Bitcoin with Bitcoin miners, I mean, this is because this was how Bitcoin was designed, to make it harder and harder to make. When it first came out, Steve Gibson set up a regular PC. Next morning, he wakes up, 50 Bitcoin, cha-ching, which he promptly lost, which is a shame because they were worth more than $1 million at the peak. But nowadays, you have to be living next to a Chinese hydroelectric dam and have special ASICs and lots of cooling because and this was how it's designed. So it gets harder and harder to mine. I just heard a statistic the other day, and I can't confirm this, but it was in a very good book about climate change called The Uninhabitable Earth, that Bitcoin miners today use more electricity than all the electricity generated by solar panels globally, worldwide. In other words, all the progress we made... building solar panels. I have 60 on my house. And, making
them
all shot by Bitcoin miners, of all things.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So do we need another cryptocurrency?
See, no one is actually spending Bitcoin.
Right, that's the thing. Most people are just hoarding
it. Yeah, they just hoard them. And you've got over 1 billion people on the planet who are transferring money without a bank account. And they need to find a way to do that where they're not going to get ripped off on fees. And this seems to me like a way that it could be done. But it's just, who trusts Facebook with this? And the EU is dead set against it. I think, honestly, governments are going to be the first ones to come up with these things because they can live with them. But, PayPal, I think they're getting out while the guessing is good.
Smart.
We need a cryptocurrency that people treat as a currency, not a stock.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem. It's really a pyramid scheme. Mm. And what a pyramid scheme does is encourage you to get in early and hold while the suckers come along and jack the price
push
up.
Your value up.
I forget who it was, but it was a journalist who, oh, this was years back when Bitcoin was just sort of coming to be a thing, and a sushi restaurant announced that they were willing to, you know, take Bitcoin. So she went out and she took some of her Bitcoin and she bought her friend's dinner at the sushi restaurant. And at the peak prices, she'd spent about $4.3 million on sushi.
There's that Bitcoin pizza that was like four coins. It's $100,000 pizza. That's why you don't spend it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's stupid.
Mm.
Yes.
You need something that people can spend and people can use.
I'm hoarding 7 Bitcoin, but not intentionally. I just can't remember the password. Yeah.
Bless your heart.
Bless his little heart. How much Bitcoin? A lot of it. We talked about this on Twig. A lot of it is just gone. It's disappeared. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. I want to know if you listened to Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook meetings and what you think. I don't know. I didn't. I couldn't bring myself to listen to that. We'll talk about that and a lot more. Ian Thompson's here from theregister.co.uk. He is our news editor there. Always welcome.
Oh, it was good
love
fun
to see
up.
You. We're going to open the scotch here, Aunt Pruitt, the Glendronach.
Glendronach. Yes.
Aunt Pruitt, our newest acquisition. We traded him for a player to be named later. He is the host of Hands on Photography, which launches when? Somebody got into your Glendronach.
Hands on Photography. We will do our first recording on Thursday.
And what's October the show 10th. About? What is it about?
Hands on Photography will be a spot for beginner photographers, enthusiasts.
Nice. I'm going to love that. That's great.
I might have a little thing that.
Can we explain
it?
We got to be made a little video.
Wait a minute. Pictures. We did do a video, didn't we?
Let's watch.
This is Twit.
I like the music. I love it. So my whole idea, well, I'll tell you afterwards.
Hey, folks, I'm Matt Pruitt, and welcome to Hands on Photography here on twit.tv. Each and every week, we're going to take a look at how you can get the most out of your camera so you can start sharing and posting some awesome photography. I don't care if you have a smartphone or action camera, DSLR, mirrorless, whatever it is, we're going to get the most out of your camera. We'll also get into different tips and tricks to help make your video look better. So be sure to hit that subscribe button and check us out each week here on twit.tv.
Nice.
So what we got to do, though, is get Ant. I'm going to get Ant a big kind of like Afro rig because I see him as the Bob Ross of Twit. I want him to. So you see those bags under the eyes.
Well, we will have some segments like
into
that.
Into little fluffy clouds.
We will.
Doesn't he kind of remind you a little bit? He's kind of got that soothing Bob Ross
the
presence.
Scotch makes me smooth.
It's Bob Ross with biceps is what it is.
No, it's going to be fun. I want to focus on the beginners and help people get started because, quite frankly, the photography community is full of jerks, and I want to change that. You know, we're so snobby about you need this camera, you need that lens, and when people want to get started, they get discouraged. And I want to open
inclusive.
It up. Say, hey, let's
good.
Let's
That's
get
a good
out there
plan.
And shoot, and let's just start with. The
and
basics.
It's a video show, right?
This will be video.
So we have did launch Smart Tech today with Micah and Matthew. But that's audio only, although I told people if you get 30,000 subscribers, you can be video too. We're
going to
give you video because you can't do a photography show without pictures. So I'm excited about that.
I'm it's really super exciting. Duper
the first
excited.
Of, I'm sure many new shows being launched.
And I want to say thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for taking the opportunity.
Really, really, really emotional. And man.
Don't cry, man.
Oh, I'm not going to cry.
Guy with
I am so
your size.
Pumped up. I am so pumped up.
All right, well, pour some. Bring in some glasses. I want to toast the brand new show. While we're doing that, let's talk a little bit about our sponsor for the show today, Fresh Books. I have a soft spot for these guys. They saved my bacon back in 2004 when I was still going to Canada. It was somewhere around 2004, sometime between 2004 and 2008. I used to go up there and I had to, you know, do call for help and I had to bill them for my expenses and I'd have to make every month at the end of the month I'd have to fire up Microsoft Word to make an invoice and then fire up Excel because I had to do it in Canadian dollars and the whole thing was ridiculous. So much so to the point where I kind of stopped doing it for a while, which taught me a vital lesson. If you don't bill people, they don't pay you. Amber, after I was moaning and groaning about this, said, try FreshBooks, brand new company at the time, starting up in Toronto. really great team, and they made invoicing easy. But, you know, it does more than that because it's essentially accounting. It takes the stress out of accounting for you and your business. Billing is done. You could put expenses, use the FreshBooks app to take pictures of receipts, keep track of your expenses, automatically import from your bank account into your expense report. It does hours, time tracking, all at your fingertips. So it is in the process of just doing that basic stuff, it is actually amazingly doing your accounting. Easy invoicing means more time to grow your client list, to serve them better, to share in their success. Collaborate with your team on one platform. You can utilize specific team members by assigning them to the manager role. That's really nice. But if you're a sole proprietor, it also gives you more power to do the stuff you love and less time on the books, the paperwork. Download the easy-to-use app. Snap a picture of the receipts. Capture expenses in seconds. Respond to clients from wherever you are. Never miss an update. Here's the thing I love. You always know, am I making money? You know, normally a freelancer, you never know that till tax time. Every day, you just look at the FreshBooks dashboard, you know what's going on in your business. FreshBooks lets you stay in sync across the desktop and mobile app so you can work on whatever device you prefer without missing any important information. 120 countries. FreshBooks is in 120 countries and supports currency from every one of them. Customer service comes from those nice folks up in Toronto. Phone, email, live chat. Make the running of your business easier and more efficient with FreshBooks. Go to FreshBooks.com/twit and enter the words "This Week in Tech" in the "How Did You Hear About Us" box, and you'll get 30 days for free. And we'll get a little credit, which I like. They'll know you heard it here. Really love these guys. The FreshBooks team is awesome. FreshBooks.com/twit and just write "This Week in Tech." How did you hear about us? Oh, "This Week in Tech." And you'll get 30 days free. Mark Zuckerberg, I guess. Oh. What?
Cheers.
Oh!
Cheers.
Ian says, don't defer. Drink. You're having the special clear.
Special clear edition.
Clear edition. Yeah, I apologize, Lexi, for these drunks sitting next to me.
Not a drunk. I'm experienced.
Wow, that's good.
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, yeah. No, that is good.
No, that's a fantastic taste.
I have to say, I never liked brown liquor. Until I met this guy, and he's taught me everything I know and introduced me to, good basically turned me into a drunk. It's his fault.
I just have a high tolerance, is all.
Yeah.
You drank me under the table that other day.
Oh,
jeez Louise. Back to Mark Zuckerberg, now that we've toasted. Poor Mark. Every time there's a story about Mark, there's an unflattering photo of Mark.
He just doesn't photograph well. Yeah. This is what Apple could maybe be working on. You know, it's like the Zuck neural net, which turns them into someone who looks vaguely human.
Instead
you know?
Of deep fusion, they call it deep Zuction. It would anyway, I feel bad. So The Verge got the text and audio from an internal meeting at Facebook, well, back in July, but you know, that's not that long ago. He rallied his employees against critics, competitors, and Senator Warren, who has called for Facebook to be broken up. She's not the only Democratic candidate. Somebody asked, it was an all-hands meeting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the recent FCC fine investigation, the rise of politicians like Senator Warren, I was wondering how personally worried you are, Mark, about regulators coming in and breaking up Facebook. He says, I'm certainly more worried that somebody is going to try to break up our company. He says, go ahead and try.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, there's a separate question about it. At the end of the day, there is the rule of law, which for all the concern about the direction the country is going in, as someone running a company that operates in a lot of different countries, I have to say, one of the things I love and appreciate about our country is we really have a solid rule of law, which is very different, so they ain't going to be able to do it. People are angry.
Well, you've got one firm controlling 85% of the popular communications software.
When you put it that way.
Wow.
You know, it's kind of like, said, if she gets elected president, then I bet we will have a legal challenge. I bet, Mark Zuckerberg says, we will win that challenge. And does that still suck for us? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to have a major lawsuit against our own government. I mean, that's not the position you want to be in when you know, I mean, it's like we care about our country and want to work with the government, do good things. But at the end of the day, if somebody's going to try to threaten something existential, you go to the mat and you fight. Well, of course.
Yeah. I'm with him on that.
I understand that.
Yeah, I'm with him on that. This is his baby.
He says the case isn't that strong on breaking him up. And I think this is true. He says it's not going to solve the issues.
Mm.
For instance, he says it doesn't make election interference less likely, just harder. That's all.
Although I did notice he's also decided they're going to give politicians a free pass on the fact-checking
thing. That drives me nuts.
That's just like, what exactly?
So I can't lie on Facebook.
Yeah.
But if I were running for office, anything goes.
Right.
Say whatever you want.
I said, I'll run for Petaluma dog catcher, and then you can just like libel your enemies at free will on Facebook.
I guess the theory is they don't want to get into the weeds with the... I don't know. It just feels like...
Or they're throwing muck at one another. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. If it's a blatant lie, call it out.
Mm.
And it's not the lies I'm worried about. It's the incenting to violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm actually in the minority. I don't think Trump's, for instance, retweeted the guy who said it's going to be like a civil war if Trump gets impeached. I don't think that was Trump saying there should be a civil war. But at the same time, Twitter got a lot of heat from people who said, you know, you can't let him say that.
Yeah.
Twitter's point of view is exactly the same. Look, he's the president. He can say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
No, he can't.
Well, he can. Right.
He can't.
Well, but he has consequences. He doesn't
have to be on your platform. You could say, well, sorry, but I don't want you saying it here. You could say it. I mean, obviously, he could say it anywhere he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think Twitter should block Trump.
What about the fact that someone... on the Facebook staff is in there with their recorder going.
Welcome to Silicon Valley, baby.
You know, they have the recorder going and said, hey, I want to hand this
over
to the
press. Gave it to The Verge.
See,
what do you think? You
know, what's going on there?
I think Facebook was remarkably blasé about this leaking out because usually they are very, very tight on leaks. They've got an internal affairs unit which goes after leakers. And within a few hours of this story coming out, Zuckerberg made a public post about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I wonder if there was a message being sent here rather than an actual leak.
My favorite. Actually, I enjoyed the questions.
Those comments that he made weren't that far off.
Nothing was bad.
It wasn't far off from what he said sort of publicly in interviews. This is just, I guess, a little bit more, you know, what he'd say to friends at the bar rather than, you know, to a reporter necessarily. And, yeah, the fact that he just went out and, you know, like, yep, this went out, this got posted. So, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't an actual leak from Facebook PR either.
Is it anything he can do or the company can do to help change the perception of Facebook? Anything?
I think he should step down, to be honest.
Ground up redesign, I would have thought.
I think if you really wanted to change it, and this is never going to happen,
he could pull a Bill Gates.
He has voting control. But I think he should say, you know, I want to go smoke meats. And I'm going to let maybe Sheryl Sandberg run the place. Sheryl steps up, somebody steps up and says, look, it's a brand new Facebook, and this is what we are going to do to make sure that Facebook does what you want us to do, which is protect your privacy.
Isn't Sandberg taking a lot of the heat already?
Yeah.
Well, she's maybe not the person to do this, but I'm just saying. You're right. That's probably just as bad. But
he could pull a Bill Gates. He's got his medical foundation. He could step down from the company.
He's only 32.
Well, yeah, but you know,
I don't think he wants to retire. That's the problem. Honestly, that is the problem.
Yeah, it's his baby. I mean, look at like another company, say with an embattled CEO like, you know, Uber, Travis Kalanick. You know, did removing
Perfect
him
example.
As CEO, did that make the company appear? You know, was it more favorable in people's eyes?
It's
now
doing
to
better.
Uber? It's doing better, but I don't know if it did much to
still
change
not great,
the public
but it's
image.
Doing better.
That's the thing.
Well, you have okay, so. It's a three-step process. You get rid of the founder, you bring in adult supervision, and the third most important step is you change the corporate culture. That's
culture,
a hard thing to
culture.
Do.
Culture.
Very hard.
Because the culture is based on the person who founded it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a very hard thing to do, and it takes time. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I would think that people were looking at Uber would look at it and say, well, it is getting better, except that there are a few additions. They kept stumbling. Right after Kalanick left.
They did.
And I think Khosrow Warshawhawi.
I cannot say his name.
is AOL guy.
Dara, the new CEO, is a good guy with a lot of integrity. But at the same time, there were still so many leftover scandals and problems. It didn't get better.
Yeah.
Maybe it shows how hard it is to turn the corporate culture, right? Mm-hmm. That you can get rid of the CEO, but culture is persistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Runs deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Facebook bros in there now who are just, like, used to running these things this way. I think Sandberg is compromised, given their involvement in the other
stuff
as well.
So you bring in somebody who is a CEO from the real world, and they make all the right noises. I mean, honestly,
hey, if they want to get trusted, get someone like Alex Stamos in as
former boss. Security officer
and
left.
give him a free hand.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, he left. Stamos. So he was at Yahoo.
He was at Yahoo.
And left because Yahoo leaked 3 billion records.
Yeah.
And he wasn't told about it. Then he's at Facebook and left because of Cambridge Analytica and nobody told me.
Yeah.
So I know the world has a lot of respect for Alex Stamos.
Companies don't seem to.
It's two in a row, dude. All right.
Yeah.
Do you like Elon's new rocket?
I've not seen it.
The Starship?
Oh, you have to see it.
Yeah. It's big. It's shiny.
Yeah. It'd take people to the moon and Mars.
Yeah.
Brother. Have at it. Yeah. I'll just stay
Who's
right
volunteering
here.
For the first few flights? That's what I want to know.
It's Starship Mark I, one of two identical rockets. SpaceX is assembling them. The other one, Mark II, is at the SpaceX facility in Cape Canaveral. That's where, of course, they do their launches. He said, when he unveiled it a week ago, that 1 to 2 months, the first suborbital trajectory, maximum altitude of 12 miles.
That might stick, but it's stuff like we'll have people in orbit within a year. I think that's on Musk deadlines, so you automatically multiply that by three.
Yeah, I had a few.
You know, we were supposed to have a Dragon capsule on Mars round about now, according to some previous statements. So I'm kind of like, you know, don't get me wrong. More power to him. He's revolutionized the industry. But just, yeah.
Great article in Live Science yesterday saying that it's a passive-aggressive move by Elon. There it is, by the way. And if anybody else had built that, you might say something about their
mental state. Yes.
His big, shiny Starship. NASA apparently... not super thrilled about it.
Well, they've got their space launch system, which they're trying to develop, and it's massively over budget, massively delayed, and frankly, isn't really needed anymore. You know, it's like they're building a rocket that which we could have used 5 years down the line, but with Blue Origin, with United Launch Alliance getting their act together at last, with SpaceX, plenty of other orbital platforms out there. ESA, of course, sorry. Should also go for the home team.
James Bridenstine, who's the NASA administrator, had kind of the same reaction you did. He says, I'm looking forward to the SpaceX announcement. In the meantime, commercial crew is years behind schedule. NASA expects to see the same level of enthusiasm focused on the investments of the American taxpayer. It's time to deliver.
But he didn't mention Boeing in this, which is either further behind non-commercial crew than SpaceX was. Yeah. I think they've had a falling out.
Falling out with SpaceX?
Yeah.
With Boeing and SpaceX?
No, I think NASA and SpaceX are having sort of a slight tiff at the moment.
Okay.
Sending each other bad logarithms at each other.
Speaking of Boeing, whatever happened to the 737 MAX?
Still grounded. Well, it's still grounded, but American and one more airline has signed off on the software patches.
Will you be the first to buy a ticket?
And also, European regulators have said they're not going to accept the FAA's ruling. They're going to do their own investigations.
Yeah, they signed off, and I believe they're looking at like mid 2020 as in the first other next line of testing and getting it ready to go.
Boeing's written off $4 billion on this so far.
Jeez,
just goes to show you know when designing cheap really pays off in the long run.
Really saves the big bucks.
The Seattle Times is someone who has done a series of excellent articles on this because, of course, they're Boeing.
Right, they're in the backyard.
Yeah, and it's the kind of management thinking which is well, we'll outsource this and we'll outsource that. Mm-hmm. We'll get programmers from another country to write the MDS system. And it's just a catalogue of tiny little errors which just nailed it. And, no one's going to want to fly on that thing.
And Airbus is just, here, we have a new Neo ready for you,
Last week we showed you videos that I found disturbing from Reddit of people using Tesla's new version 10 software to auto-summon their cars in parking lots and other places. Apparently I wasn't the only one disturbed by it. The top U.S. road safety regulator is gathering information about this. The NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is worried that, and says it will not hesitate to act if it finds evidence of a safety-related defect. There have been fender benders, but they're slow-motion. Slow-motion fender benders. I think part of the problem Tesla's facing is a lot of owners who just don't have any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not Tesla's fault.
Well,
not in that sense.
No.
In that
it
sense,
takes two to tango.
Because you shouldn't know better than to try to do this and be, braggadocious, if you will, at your local market and say, hey,
Tesla's seen this before.
People my car.
Sitting in the back seat while their autopilot drives them down the road. And
I'd rather brag about it and say, have my valet bring my car, you know, my driver
James,
bring my car.
James, bring the car, you know? James.
That's a baller
move.
Turns out, not
the DMV in California, our state DMV, says summons does not meet its definition of autonomous technology, so it's not subject to our self-driving regulations.
Interesting.
That's handy.
They don't need a permit.
You're never going to stop people using a tech. I mean, you remember the Google Glass? And within about a month of that coming out, somebody had been punched for wearing one in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they released the full footage, you saw why, because you'd gone to Vesuvio's at 1 o'clock in the morning and started insulting people.
Right.
Yeah.
Which you just don't do.
Not in Vesuvio's, that's for sure. So Musk says in his tweet, it's the most, that Summon is the most viral feature Tesla has ever released. And that it has been used, get ready for this, 550,000 times.
Mm. Already.
More than half a million times.
Are there that many Teslas out there with this?
Yeah.
Man.
Because of the Model 3, it sold very well. So
I guess so.
And they all got version 10, so they all got that feature.
Are you Tesla free now?
No, I had a Model X, which I sent back, and I haven't got a new one. But I had the lease ran out. I sent it back after 3 years. But I never once in 3 years used Summon. I just didn't trust it. I was afraid it was going to crash into the garage
or
something. The car couldn't stop hitting my wife in the head.
Yeah, I remember that story. The doors.
You know, the Falcon Wing doors?
Yeah,
I remember that.
Several times, poor Lisa was clonked by it. So much to the point that she said, you can't use that unless you shout very loudly, I'm going to close the doors now. All clear?
That's not as cool as just like...
No,
you know?
No, really lost some of its charm for me.
Oh, man.
But I guess it lost some of its charm for her as well after getting clonked in the head. Yeah. So if the doors are clonking people in the head, can you really trust the car to drive to you across a crowded parking lot?
That would be no.
Mm. Let's see. We did the Microsoft thing. I'm just going through the stories. Get ready. 2018 was the year of ransomware. Then 2019 is the year of ransomware. Get ready for 2020.
More.
The year of ransomware.
Yeah.
Over 500 U.S. schools were hit by ransomware in 2019. 15 districts in the last 2 weeks alone.
They're being targeted.
Are you not surprised? I mean,
not at
security
all.
Is not... Not up to snuff in the schools because of budgeting and so forth. So
I just want to say I called because a lot of those school computers were offline or barely used during the summer.
Yep,
we had seen over the summer ransomware attacks on city governments in Florida, like targeted attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? I bet all summer long these school systems have been collecting email with tons of ransomware in them. I said, watch. As schools open, you're going to see a wave of ransomware in school districts. Mm. Absolutely what happened.
It's unfortunate, but it was an easy target, fish in a barrel.
Yeah. And also, there's now various companies offering ransomware insurance, which is only going to make the situation worse.
That's what happened in Florida. They had city governments had all gotten together to say, well, look, we'll self-insure all of us. And so that meant a guaranteed payment.
Yeah. So basically, as long as the ransomware operators know, as long as they don't pitch it too high... The insurance company will say, look, just pay it, save us some money.
It's cheaper.
And, you know, this is exactly what's been happening with business. They've now got personal ransomware insurance plans. So we're going to see it pivoting back towards individuals as well, if those prove popular.
68 ransomware incidents in municipalities in the first 9 months of 2019. 68.
Government and bodies are definitely being targeted. And it's just... It's well, fish, here's as you say, news. It's fish in a barrel. It's grenade
here's
fishing.
Here's the really good news. Last week, the U.S. Senate passed a bill named the DHS Cyber Hunt and Incident Response Team Act.
Yay.
C-H-I-R-T-A. CHIRTA.
But are you getting anything done?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
They passed a bill. Come on. It would create incident response teams to help private and public entities defend against cyber attacks. It had been passed up by the House, so it's expected to be signed by the president if he stops tweeting in the coming months.
Well, there's that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Could not resist. Let's see. A hacker has stolen 218 million Words with Friends records. Actually, it's all from Zynga.
Yeah.
218 million
Zynga.
Users.
Who remembers that people who still use those?
What did they get? Well, based on sample data that the hacker shared with the Hacker News, names, email addresses, logins, hashed passwords with SALT, password reset token if ever requested, phone numbers if provided, Facebook ID if connected, Zynga account ID. Not a big
deal. Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. No hashes problem. Were salted, is what you're saying?
The passwords were hashed and salted.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they won't be cracked, but they were hashed and salted.
Right. Kind of can't believe this hasn't happened earlier, to be honest. It's such a huge platform like Words with Friends. Man, it just sort of surprises me that it's taken this long. Because, I mean, the heyday of Words with Friends was, what, 2015, 2016?
I know people who play religiously every day.
Yeah, but no, but it's still incredibly popular. It just, you know, it doesn't make... You know, if I was a hacker, I wouldn't think of it as a primary target necessarily, but think of the numbers there. It's huge.
Yeah. It's a good business to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they make money on it because they sell cheats and they sell all sorts of little things to make you a better Words with Friends player.
Yeah, Zynga. It's not just Farmville.
Zynga. It's not just Farmville anymore. Our show today brought to you by the best way in light of all these breaches to keep yourself secure, ExpressVPN. A virtual private network is the way to secure your information, your data, without slowing your internet speed, to keep you private on the public internet, especially at a Wi-Fi access point that other people are using. It's easy for hackers to bypass Wi-Fi security. Flaws like crack, K-R-A-C-K, the key reinstallation attack, and make it trivial. If you ever use Wi-Fi in a public place at a hotel, a shopping mall, an airport, that data is going out over an open network. That's not encrypted at all. But the thing is, you know you want to use a VPN. Everybody, it just, you know, Google, why should I use a VPN? And you'll find a million articles. But the question is, what is the best VPN? I get that question all the time. Now, I'll give you some ways to judge. Number one, remember that if you use a VPN, you're just kicking that security and privacy issue down the road because, yeah, you're safe in the airport, but the VPN provider now has access to all of that. So you got to trust that VPN provider, right? The place where you emerge into the public internet. Ideally, you have a VPN provider that doesn't log what you're up to, that doesn't look at your data. Some VPN providers, especially the free ones, sell your information, will even inject ads into sites that don't have ads. You'll get an ad because of the VPN provider, not ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN just went through a complete audit. The auditor, third-party audit, said ExpressVPN's privacy policy is exactly what they say it is. Furthermore, they have a trusted server technology that actually prevents their VPN server from writing any data at all to the disk. They couldn't log your usage even if they wanted to. And the third-party auditor said, yep, that trusted server works. Number one VPN provider, according to TechRadar, according to CNET, it's fast, it's reliable. It's the one I use. The VPN servers run in RAM. They can't log data. They can't write to the hard drive even by accident. And here's another way you know. Ask your VPN provider, well, tell me about government subpoenas and search warrants. We know, we've seen it in the news time and time again, sometimes governments, let's say like the Turkish government, they don't bother with these silly things like search warrants. They just go, they take the server without warning. They did that in Turkey, could find nothing because there's nothing on it. Your privacy is protected. If you want the best in online security and privacy protection, expressvpn.com/twit. We've got a nice deal. You get a one-year package, you get 3 extra months free. 3 extra months free with a one-year package. ExpressVPN.com/twit. You need a VPN, you should choose the right VPN. You should get the number one trusted VPN, expressvpn.com/twit. Oh, there's so much wonderful news. WeWork IPO. How's that going? How's that going for the WeWork?
I work in a WeWork office, and I have to say the atmosphere over the last couple of weeks has been...
grim?
Positively funereal, yes.
So Adam Neumann, the co-founder, stepped down. They were trying to do an IPO. Then everybody said, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, everyone's like, they read their S1 filing, and we're like, well, hang on.
Actually read the paperwork.
You're burning through $700 million a quarter. You run out of money next spring, and the founder has just cashed out $700 million of his own shares. That's a Chinese military parade full of red flags, and it's just the whole thing is collapsing in on itself.
Well, they pulled their IPO. The founder stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
And
was spotted walking barefoot through the streets of Brooklyn trying to look very moody. And it's just, he's going to get punched.
Many people were taking aim at the WeWork IPO, but I think the trigger was pulled by NYU business professor Scott Galloway.
I love Scott Galloway.
Yeah.
Who's posting, WTF.
Yeah.
Called the WeWork $47 billion valuation insane, seriously loco, an illusion. New York Magazine's Intelligencer asked him, now that they pulled the filing, what are your thoughts on WeWork and its IPO? Dude, he says, he likes to say dude.
Yeah.
Dude, there is no IPO. I'm taking a bit of a victory lap here. I said in 2017, this was the most overvalued company in the world. I said earlier this year, the IPO is not going to be happened. This is now a distressed asset. IPO, it's comical that people are still using those letters.
Well, he had a lovely phrase in that article. He said, basically, Uber started the decline and WeWork has massively increased the momentum. It's like we've had this cocaine-fueled party in Studio 54. Uber was the light starting to go on, and now they've gone on so bright it's like we're in an operating room. Yeah. It's just... I mean, I'm sorry. It's an office space rental company. It's not doing anything that anyone else can't do.
And they kept mentioning in the S1 that their technology. Technology is that. Like, really?
They can't even get the coffee machine
to
work.
Is it a good place to have your office in?
It's small, cramped offices with glass
partitions. We have some in
Petaluma.
We have two. Not WeWorks, though. There are other companies that do... kind of a shared space, and they offer...
Our last landlord doubled the rent on us, so we just moved in there because they offered us a good deal.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I would cheerfully move on somewhere else or work from home when they go bust. But
here's what... one of the things Galloway pointed out is that the WeWork has leases, in some cases, as long as 15 years for these spaces. But people like you, they get 1 month.
Yeah.
Yep. If you felt like leaving, you'd leave.
Yep.
No, exactly.
And that lease goes on.
And you're still on the hook for that lease, 15 years.
The only thing that's going to save even a part of the company now is if they've got leases are site-specific, in which case they can take the few profitable properties, run those as a business, and just dump everything else
into
bankruptcy.
And that's what Ben Thompson pointed out in Stratechery, is that WeWork does what a lot of companies do. They have separate LLCs for every single lease.
Shell game.
So if they ever walk, if they said they could walk out, all it would be, the only risk would be that particular LLC. Mm-hmm. They could walk away from those.
So, okay, that's smart.
So Ben said, look, this is not a recommended strategy, but that there, you know, even though there's this mismatch of timelines, it is possible for WeWork to waddle. I don't think I would be buying WeWork.
Well, honestly, I feel the same way about Uber at the moment. I mean, the game is slowing.
I take Uber all the time, though. Am I bad to take Uber? Is that a...
No, you're spending VC's money.
My son will only take Lyft because of after all the bad publicity.
That's what I did.
Lexi, do you take Uber at all?
No, I don't take Uber. If I have to, I take Lyft. But I've actually gone back to taxis. It's actually cheaper, and they know where they're going.
Taxis are cheaper? I thought...
In San Francisco, the last few times I've tried to catch a Lyft, I've looked at the price... And I've gone, okay, well, let's get in a taxi because it was actually the taxi was right there. The Lyft was like 10 minutes to go. So I got in and it actually worked out to be, you know, $4 to $5 less than what I would have paid.
But remember, when you don't use Uber and Lyft, you're not hurting the company particularly. In fact, you're saving the money by not using
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But you do hurt the drivers yeah. who are trying to make a living as independent drivers.
But no, to come back to your point, I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, and you're right. If you're outside of peak times, take a taxi. You save yourself a fortune.
Mm-hmm. Or the subway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, who really wants to sit in someone else's
Well, you stay. Okay, first rule on the subway, if there's a car that's empty, you go to the next car.
Yeah.
There's a reason why no one is in that car.
I mean, the subway is great, and particularly coming back from clubbing, you can get it at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it'll still get you home.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're now getting to the point where they're having to price themselves into the market, and taxi drivers are beating them. So I think with Lyft and Uber, their business model just doesn't make sense, and it's just how fast stuff can get passed around until, you know, the music stops.
Lexi, you said something earlier that kind of surprised me, that pagers, when you were coming up, people still used pagers.
Yeah, I remember my parents having pagers, for
I
sure.
I had one.
Yeah, I definitely remember them. I didn't necessarily use one myself, but they were around.
I still see them around. I wonder, what are people doing with them? I had a BlackBerry, which was just a pager on steroids.
I had one of those, too.
It had a keyboard, and you could send and receive email.
Please tell me you didn't use the belt mounting strap.
No. It needs to make a comeback because we've got bigger phones like the Galaxy Fold. Imagine just putting that in your holster.
The
you
fashion
know?
Costs
just,
were
like,
just
right
too
there on
high.
The belt.
I did it all.
There was a guy in our
although
this is really sad, there was a guy in our office who had one of those like police gun holsters for his mobile phone.
Everyone was just like wanker.
So Lexi, I'm just saying, as an attractive young woman, you wouldn't turn your back on a guy who had a phone clipped to his belt?
Well, I didn't say that I found it attractive.
Oh, okay.
I find it practical.
Practical. No, but practical is not it's bad practical. With a guy, right?
I am practical in all sense of it all. So,
okay. Yes. Well, good
That's
to
the
know.
Only reason
your
why
phone's
I did
in your pocket. Wait a minute. What do we have here? A pager.
That looks like a pager.
So I want to just, is this, we use this actually. Engineers use this, right? If I press the button in my office, it pages you?
Yeah. Wow.
Where did you find this? I mean, how did you find this technology?
I think you found it on D Street.
Yeah.
I use it all the time. I have this button on my console whenever.
Oh, but that
I,
rings.
I have
that,
a horrible.
So press the button and we'll see what happens here.
This is my panic
That's
button.
Not annoying at all.
I feel like somebody wants to buy cocaine. I don't know why I'm getting that impression. But
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea whatsoever.
I did it. Call. So the reason I bring this up, it's kind of a sad moment. Last Tuesday, Japan turned off the pagers.
Oh, no. Aww.
Ending a 50-year run, Tokyo Telemessage was the sole remaining pager provider in Japan.
Wow.
It began shutting down the signals midnight Monday. The Japanese name for pagers is Pokebero, or pocket bells. Sales of the device began 50 years ago in 1968 with the predecessor of NTT Corp. For those who don't remember, you reach a pager by dialing a number from a landline.
Yeah.
And you can actually leave your number on the more fancy ones and it would beep the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Say call.
And put 911 on the end.
Apparently in Japan, there was a boom. Japanese schoolgirls, who else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Japanese schoolgirls in the 90s. Came up with clever combinations of numbers because you could only display a number, but they figured out ways to send messages just doing the numbers, right?
That's clever. It's like, you know, when you used to write words on calculators.
Yeah, by turning them upside down.
Yeah.
Yes. We all know what we're talking about.
Leet speak?
Yeah, but the Japanese, so for instance, 33414, which in Japanese, if you said it, the numbers is Samishio, which means I'm lonely.
Oh, so it's like call me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 999 or 3 san 9s Q was a way to say thank you or thank you.
Now that's pretty cool.
That's cute. San-kyu. I like that. You see?
Yeah,
it has
a purpose.
I wasn't that clever. Sorry.
No.
At its peak, there were 10 million pagers in use in Japan. That was in 1996. Began decline. It's declined with the arrival of mobile phones shortly after that. So that's it. No, I guess we still have them in the States, though.
Very popular with the medical
profession. If any Japanese schoolgirls want to move here, they're more than welcome.
Apparently very popular with the medical profession because they are incredibly hard-wearing. You know, you can just
look at
that
pager that John showed me. That thing had gone through the mill.
Yeah.
Beat up like crazy.
And still works.
And it's still, it takes a licking and it keeps on beeping. Folks, there's lots more, but I think we've worked these people to the bitter end. What are you doing, John? Did you take your pager apart? The pager's fine. Oh, wow. He says the pager's fine.
Get your story right. This pager's just fine.
John, do you know, do we use a pager service?
Well,
or is this
fine is possibly internal. Stretching this a little. It's been a little bit battered, but...
we use our own internal pager service.
Yeah, the case is comprehensively buggered.
So we only can text 999 to each other.
Thank you.
It's a Visiplex. Would Russell find these at a flea market? Wow.
You do it.
That's wait a minute. The
John,
irony
you never
of
took the irony off the screen.
Hang on, never taken the plastic off.
It's not a Galaxy Fold. You can take the screen protector off, John. It's okay.
Seriously, honestly, taking.
Padre's
fault. Oh,
it's your fault, Padre.
He was in the chat room earlier. Is he still in there?
You guys are a lot of fun. I had so much fun. Lexi, come back anytime. We just
Thanks
really
for having
enjoy
me.
You. What is going on at CNET these days? What are you covering?
Lots of fun things. So speaking of extreme testing of devices, I have a fun video coming up where I take the iPhone 11 and 11 Pro underwater and see how they go.
You're brave.
Well, I physically didn't put a scuba set on, but I have my ways to get them underwater.
Quite a good idea. Have you become the queen of the torture test? Is that your new thing?
You know, I do lots of different things, so I'll put that. I'll add that crown to my portfolio.
Queen
Why not?
Of the torture test, Lexi Savides, Lexys. Put it up again because I can't spell it. Savides on the Twitter, senior editor at CNET. What a pleasure having you in.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks for having me,
Mr. Ant. Thank you so much for the scotch.
Yes, sir.
And
thank
for
you.
The insight. Ant Pruitt is our newest host at twit.tv, @_Pruitt on Twitter. And Hands On Photography, brand new first episode coming up.
Thursday.
Can't wait. Thursday. Go right now and subscribe, twit.tv/hop.
Correct.
Hop.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ant. Can't wait. The Bob Ross of biceps.
The viewers did seem to like that.
Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should mention his
t-shirt now says, Where's the Barbell?
Yeah, where's the Barbell?
Where's the Barbell?
People seem to love my t-shirts.
You are the king of t-shirts. If Lexi is the queen of torture tests, you are the king
People
of t-shirts.
Like my t-shirts. I'll have to
and
do something about that next
We
week.
Should say the king of snark himself, Mr. Ian Thompson, the register.co.uk.
He only called one person a wanker today, one.
You know, he's demanding you use some Britishisms, and we heard nothing from you.
Oh, well, I mean, there was very little. There was no one's really been mad as a sack of badgers or, you know.
we love them all.
Well, there's the single malt, too. That might have helped.
That quieted me down a bit. Just like, oh, okay. Who's hungry, right?
Collie Wobbles, somebody wanted you to say.
Collie Wobbles. Yeah, okay.
It's all right. You'll have to come back and do it all again.
No, that's fair enough.
That's all there is to it. Actually, you are going to, when I'm on vacation, you're hosting a twit. Is that right? Or you're on a twit.
That is incorrect.
I was going to say. It's news to me.
His eyes got big.
Well, no. I've only sat in the big chair once, and it's a big responsibility.
It is.
Who's hosting for me when I'm
gone? We are going to have Jason Snell hosting.
Okay.
Lindsay Turrentine from CNET is hosting.
Nice.
We might actually
your boss.
Bring,
yeah. Yeah, we brought
Lexi
the boss
back
in.
Up for that.
Yeah, Lexi should come just for that. Lindsay's great.
Lindsay's awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be her first time hosting. And we're going to have a, when Leo's away, the hosts will play.
You don't remember that one?
You and Micah?
And Mr. Howell.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Yes.
Oh, geez. That's not for a couple of weeks. I have time to change that, nip that in the
I'm
blood.
Still surprised you're letting us run this week in Google after this past Wednesday.
Apparently, that I got so many comments in the new Twit community, www.twit.community. About how funny that show was. Where's Willie? Everybody loved that show. I have to say, when I'm gone and you guys host and you do better than me, I don't like that.
Oh, sorry.
I just have to warn you. I don't like it. No, I love it. Are you kidding?
It's lots of fun.
We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, about 2:30 Pacific. That's 5:30 Eastern Time, 21:30 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can at twit.tv/live. If you're watching live, chat rooms live, irc.twit.tv. That's a great place to hang. But as I mentioned earlier, you don't have to watch live to interact with other Twit listeners. That's what the community is for. www.twit.community. It's free to sign up, and I'd love to see you in there. We're having a lot of fun with it. Mm. We also love having a studio audience. We had some great visitors. I put their cards down somewhere. Here it is. We had Kelly and Tim visiting from San Jose and from Fort Collins, Colorado, home of WWV. Kevin, it was nice to have you, too. If you want to be in studio, just email tickets at twit.tv. Especially with vacations coming up and schedules changing, it's always a good idea to email. That way we know you're coming, and we'll email you back, especially if you know, sometimes you can't get in. If I'm not here, if you can't get in, or if I'm not going to be here, we'll let you know so you're not disappointed. So tickets at twit.tv is always a good idea to email. On the other hand, if you don't, and we got a chair, we'll make room for you. Let's see. On-demand versions of the show always available at our website, twit.tv. But the best way to get anything we do is to subscribe. And you can do that on the website, but in your favorite podcast application. It's always good because that way you have it on your phone. You'll know you have it before you get in the car on the way home. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Another Twit.
This is amazing.